Welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks for being here. Today on the big program, Isaiah Poole, editor over at the OurFuture.org site, going to be here talking about the State of the Union. Also, why isn't anybody using the P word with poverty so high? Why aren't we talking about poverty? Why aren't we talking about, instead of talking about going to the moon, why aren't we talking about solving the problems we've got here? We'll talk to that with Isaiah Poole. Also in the second hour, Chris Calabrese, CWA Local 1109 organizer from New York, going to talk about the big win out there. Joshua Holland, senior writer and editor over at Alternate, also the host of Alternate Radio Hour. With Joshua Holland airing in Washington, D.C. on WEAC Radio. Going to be here in the second hour talking about the free enterprise system. And are we really under attack? And would Romney know it if it bit him in the behind? We'll find out. In the third hour, Harvey Kay is going to be here from Sarasota, Florida. He's there for Thomas Paine's birthday celebration, which is January 29th. He was born in the year 1737. So, we'll talk about that. Also, your calls, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Well, our boy Rick Santorum is coming home. He's going to take a 24-hour stint, come back to Pennsylvania, going to maybe kick his feet up on the couch. I don't know, take a break. He's getting his hat handed to him. He did really well last night in the debate, but it's not happening for him. He's broke, he's tired, so he's going to head back here to Pennsylvania. He said he's going to do his taxes, so good for him. The quote of the day, though, has to come from him. He says, other candidates tell you they need your help. They're lying. I really need your help. Me over here. I mean, that's what would you expect? But he plans to stay in it. He says this is a three-person race, and they're going to go as long as he has, another nickel. I don't see it. I think it's good for him. I give him credit. The guy works. The guy's a worker. Give him credit for that. I think the majority, even the radicals, see him as a radical. So, good. I don't know if you saw the latest poll. It looks like Romney is kind of pulling ahead. He's got a 9-point lead in the new Florida poll, going on now, 38-29 over Gingrich. Just the other day, it was a dead heat. Now they seem to be separating. I think the crazy talk about the moon, I think that has something to do with it. Just my thought. But last night it was actually, number 19. And I think Santorum won the debate. I thought he did better than all the other ones. Romney came in second. Gingrich looked tired and limped basically to the finish line. And, of course, Ron Paul, as always, the court jester, the class clown, really that kid you really hope someone smacks. So he just goes away at some point. But, you know, you got to have that. You got to have the doofus. You've got to have the kid who will put the lampshade down his head and take his zipper down. There you go. You know, look at it. Romney's the lead is going to continue. I think he's going to win big unless something dramatic happens. Maybe another one of those offshore accounts. Maybe we find out he's been evading taxes and someone says, hey, I found something else. It looks like the new train has just run a little low on steam. And like I said, he looked tired last night. So here's the good news. No more Republican reruns. No more debates until at least February 22nd. Kind of good. You know, the Republican, the GOP reruns are going to take a break because, you know, really, I don't think these debates have done much in clarifying their positions. They're really just sniping at each other, which is entertaining. I don't know what's good for our body politic, though. I'm not sure. I think it's funny watching them tear each other apart. I don't know that I would get involved in it. If I were one of the candidates, I would say, I don't think so. This just isn't working. Let's try a different forum. Let's do something different. Now, Romney looked much better than he's looked in the other debates. And I guess that hidden money that he's got, he went out and he hired himself a new debate coach. He got Michelle Bachmann's former debate coach, which evidently he must be fantastic because Romney looked really well. And it showed. So maybe Romney will look at the tea queen for the VP slot. That would be a huge mistake, and let's hope he makes it. Anyway, he looked much more aggressive. He looked prepared. He looked well rehearsed. Had some good sound bites. And I just thought he looked much better. The media folks have got to be happy because Wolf Blitzer didn't look like a tool. He didn't get himself beat up, so good for him, as some of the other media folks did. And you know, I kind of like some of the fights that went on. You know, since this is kind of like a boxing match, you know, it's kind of how it's been billed. Now, in the first round, they went after Freddie Mac. And what's kind of funny is you look at Romney and Gingrich, who really both benefited from Freddie Mac. Romney much more so, of course, because, you know, he's got a boatload of money. But it's funny watching them go after each other. And in that debate, I think Romney did prevail, because at the end of it, does anybody buy that Gingrich didn't do any lobbying work? Does anybody buy that? Because I don't. This idea that we're going to pay you hundreds of thousands of dollars to a guy who's a historian. Now, his company did some lobbying work. They did some influence peddling. Like, come on. We're adults in the room. We can figure that one out. I may have been born at night. It just wasn't last night. I did like the fight between Santorum and Romney over Romney Care and Obamacare. Because that's both Romney and Gingrich believed in the individual mandate, which now they don't so much. I would say Santorum never. He believes he's a good, true conservative. I believe in me, and I don't care about anybody else. Me. That's it. I shouldn't have to. Me. And you got to give him credit. He's consistent on a certain level with that. Now, is that the kind of person you want running our society? I don't think so. But at least he's consistent. The other fight was over immigration. Should we send granny home? You know, people who've been here 20, you put them on a bus. We round them all up with the big orange, the big orange straps like they do in New York, to get the Occupy people, the big orange fencing. Do we just tie a bunch of them up, drag them out of the country? I don't know. And you gotta love Romney's anti-Gingrich ad, the one that's titled Spanish, the Language of the Ghetto. You gotta love that. I almost fell for the media reporting that Romney's grandfather was from Mexico. That's not what it was. They fled to Mexico, and then they came into the country illegally. They snuck back in. So that's how that went. Also, I like the blind trust discussion, the fight over the wealth and the taxes and all of that, that somehow Romney has this blind trust that he doesn't know how it's invested. Oh, he has nothing to do with it. Oh, I don't know. I just put it in someone else deals with it. Yeah, his personal lawyer. And it invested $1 million with his son's business. So, blind trust. You know, that guy who was, you know, just taking care of those assets really thought Romney's son was a good investment. Again, if we're buying that, I got some bridges for sale. But, you know, that's what they're shoveling. So there you go. The moon talk was fun. Did you like the moon talk? That was fun, too. On one hand, I agree with Gingrich. We need to think big and bold. That's one of the great things about this country. We have big ideas, and my question was, how you gonna pay for it? You know, when Kennedy did that, oh my goodness, we spent money. We invested heavily in the space program. Gingrich just thinks it's gonna happen, and I loved Romney's response, which was exactly what I say about all of these things that we think the private sector is going to do. And it is the perfect response, and I hope someone picks up on it. Look, you got Gingrich saying, well, you know, the private sector, they'll send shuttles and they'll do all this stuff. And Romney goes, look, if one of my executives came to me and said, look, I'm gonna bankroll hundreds of millions, billions of dollars into this idea that we can maybe go to space and, you know, do some tourism and shuttles back and forth. He said, I'd fire him. I'd fire him right on the spot. And I understand, Romney likes firing people, but still, this is the business mentality. There's no guarantee of payoff. You know, this idea that Romney understands free enterprise, not really. He understands government enterprise, how he's going to make buck off of that, and how he's going to be able to abuse the tax code and abuse you and me. But he gets when there's a bad idea that the private sector is somehow going to take us to the moon. Because maybe we give them a prize. Maybe they get one of those little plastic trinket things like my kids love getting at the Chuck E. Cheese when they throw enough tokens into the machines. You know, maybe a tattoo. So I loved it. I loved the whole thing. It was pretty good. Not only does Gingrich want to go to the moon, he also said something about Venus. And, you know, anybody who knows him knows he's fond of Uranus. The moon talk got me. I love that. So there you go. The weirdest question, I thought, did you get this question where Wolf asked about the first ladies who would make the best first lady? Did you find it creepy when Gingrich said that all three wives represented here would be great? Was he talking about his wife? Whose wife was he taking out? Who was he not talking about? Or maybe slip of the tongue. Maybe you got an open relationship there. Maybe Nudie has, you know, hey, you never know. Anyway, Obama was asked, you know, on Univision on Wednesday, what he thought of the GO mirrors, and, you know, the answer you would give. Look, don't know who it's going to be yet, but they're all wrong for the country, every one of them, and they're all insane. And that's the right response. The right response is, look, you know, they're going to take us back in the old direction. They're going to take us back to the failed policies. They're going to take us back in the direction of all the things that got us into the mess that we're in right now. And he's right. And I think the American people get it. I think we're finally waking up to the reality that these folks are nuts. And even the Republicans, I think they're really, the Republican establishment is going, wait a second, we got a serious problem on our hands. We got a guy who's hiding money overseas in offshore accounts, who basically insane when it comes to financial things and immigration policy. We're going to just let them go home? What? Explain that again. And then you got Gingrich, who I think even the Republicans are going, wow, we can't have him either. And then the other two are just for comedy relief. So now you're starting to see the emergence of and I've been worried about this. Jeb, can we do another Bush? Please, no. Please, Republicans, have a brain. But he was out yesterday saying that, look, you know, Republicans better hold off on this rightward shift, especially when you're talking about immigration, because it's turning off Hispanic voters. And, you know, when I heard him say that, I'm going, do you think? And then I started thinking, well, what about women? What about workers? What about students? What about the poor, the aged? What about basically anyone who isn't very wealthy, white, upper crust, or brain damaged? What about them? Aren't you turning them off, too, with every word that spews out of their mouth? And I think the answer is yes. This party has become so isolated and so ideologically predisposed to pandering to the Romney types that they've forgotten everybody else. And I look at Marco Rubio saying, well, you know, we can't have all this anti-immigrant talk. And then you have a Republican mayor like this guy up in East Haven, Connecticut. I don't know if you saw this, the mayor up there, Joseph Maturo. He was asked by a New York television station, he said, what are you going to do for the Latino community today? I guess they had some problems. So the guy said, hey, what are you going to do for the Latino community? And the guy, the mayor, a Republican, no surprise there, said, I might have tacos when I go home. Not quite sure, might have tacos. That's what he's going to do for the Latino community. He's the mayor of an area with a huge Latino community. And I laughed when yesterday he came into the office to 500 tacos that were left at his office, sent, of course, by residents. And I would say, better save those tacos, brother, because I'll bet you're going to be looking for a job when your term is up. I don't know. You don't get more GO me than that. Anyway, let's take a quick break. When we come back, Isaiah Poole from the Campaign for America's Future, back right after this. Stick around.
Saving work in America, one show at a time. The Rick Smith Show.
You're listening to the best of The Rick Smith Show.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News, a production of Diversified Media Enterprises. I'm Doug Cunningham.
We are the union!
Everybody, union!
Striking New York City school bus drivers demonstrated their fighting spirit in a rally that drew thousands of people supporting their strike. Striker Carmen Perez says the workers are determined to win the strike over job protections.
Doesn't matter if it rains, it is cold, it's snowing, we're going to go all the way to the end. We're going to fight it.
Amalgamated Transit Union Local 1181 President Michael Cordiello told a local New York City TV station that the strike isn't over wages.
It's much more about the lies about whether it's legal or not, or whether they can negotiate with us or not. This is about union busting, in my opinion, and they should come to the table and stop the nonsense.
As low-wage workers begin to rise up in collective action to improve their conditions, restaurant workers face especially tough challenges when it comes to the federal minimum wage and their tips. In most states, tips must be counted toward that minimum, meaning a very low cash wage. Melinda Tuhus has more.
The high road to profitability in the long run creates less turnover for these employers, higher profitability, and higher productivity among workers. California is one of seven states in the union that actually do not have a difference between the minimum wage for regular workers and tipped workers. In California, all workers, regardless of whether they earn tip, earn a minimum of $8 an hour. Now, California is the largest and fastest growing restaurant industry of any state in the country. And so the argument that having a regular minimum wage for tipped workers would kill business just doesn't hold water.
This story was underwritten by a grant from the Burger Marx Foundation.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
You're listening to the best of the Rick Smith Show.
Don't you know, talking about a revolution sounds whisper. Don't you know?
Together, we can make America better. The Rick Smith Show. Progressive talk with a conscience.
While they're standing in the world with lines, crying at the doorsteps of those armies of salvation. Wasting time in the unemployment line.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Check out the website at thericksmithshow.com. Questions, comments, something on your mind, Rick at thericksmithshow.com. You know, I look at this, and, you know, the whole GOP presidential primary here, all of this process, all I keep hearing them bashing not only each other, which I kind of enjoy, but going after the president and after the country as a whole. Oh, we're on decline. Oh, the country's, you know, we're worse off now because of that guy. Understand, the policies that got into this mess, their policies, the same things that they want to do. And I think they're in the State of the Union, the president. I got to give him credit. They came out and said, look, that fighter that I've been looking for, somebody who looks like he's going to pop somebody in the mouth, you know, I love this.
Anyone who tells you that America is in decline or that our influence has waned doesn't know what they're talking about.
That would be the entire Republican Party. Anyway, I've got Isaiah Poole, editor of OurFuture.org, over at the Campaign for America's Future on the line. Isaiah, thanks for taking time for me.
I really much appreciate it. It's my pleasure.
You know, I look at the State of the Union, and I thought it was a great speech. I thought I thought the priorities were there. Now it's action I want to see.
Well, I think that's exactly right. I was slightly critical of the speech, not because the direction and the tone and the feistiness wasn't there. They absolutely were, and he was definitely moving in the right direction. And there were, in fact, some specifics that were particularly solid, particularly for workers. The focus on manufacturing was, I think, a precedent-setting commitment to get manufacturing on track and use the federal government's resources to do that. And I thought it was very important for him to say that. I would have liked to have heard a much more robust jobs agenda than what he offered. But I think in general, the robust defense of an activist government was very important.
Well, not only that, but also talking about, you know, if you work for a living, it should pay. If there
right.
should be some equality, we should be looking to those who are doing really well and asking them to help out, shared sacrifice, all of that stuff. You know, and I thought, you know, afterwards I saw the Republicans attack. And the attack was, well, this is the same stuff. This is what he said last year. Romney said it's like Groundhog Day. So, in essence, what the Republicans did is they're beating him up for being consistent, something obviously they're not.
Yeah, and they obviously did not. I mean, if you read Mitch Daniels' response to the State of the Union address, which I actually thought was, for a response, was well written, smartly crafted to appeal to the Republican audience. But when you boiled it down, it was essentially, let's continue to give the wealthy what they've been asking for and wait for that to trickle down to the rest of us. And if, obviously, if he had said that in those terms, it would have fallen like a lead balloon because people just don't want to hear that anymore. But let's be clear, that's exactly what he said.
Yeah, and what amazed me is, you know, they chose him on that day when they had rammed through their No Rights at Work agenda there, basically telling the American working people of this country that they hate labor, they hate workers, and putting him up as that poster child, because I think he could be a vice presidential poll. I think that's the reason they threw him out there, say, let's see what kind of response we get from this guy, see if he can, you know, he can pull the rhetoric. And I got to tell you, if it's not Rubio, I think he's on the short list.
I agree with you. So I think we have to watch him, and I think we really do have to watch that fight in Indiana right now because it's as important as the fight in Wisconsin right now with Scott Walker's recall. I mean, if Indiana is allowed to get away with that right to work piece, I mean, I think that's going to be a fairly devastating blow. And I think if the Republicans who get behind that ought to feel in peril.
Absolutely. I've been saying that since it's going on. Look, every working person in this country now is looking at them going, is this what you're going to do? Is this what happens when we give you power? The only job creation that happens is actually making my job worse.
And, you know, one of the things that's interesting about this is predicated on the notion that unions are somehow responsible for the decline of American manufacturing. When in fact, you know, we've had a couple of exposés done by the New York Times this week on Apple. And, you know, one of the things that's notable, particularly about the Sunday piece on Apple, is that the Apple executives admit it's not labor, it's not wages that's the issue. Because you can make an Apple iPhone with American workers being paid American level wages and benefits, and would add only marginal cost to the cost of the iPhone itself.
Yeah, for them it's conditions, and you've heard Romney say that it's not so much the wages. Oh, the wages were bad, but it was those work rules. Business just can't compete with rules.
Well, particularly if the competition is a Chinese factory in which they have about 10,000 workers in a dormitory, where the foreman of the boss can walk in and wake up 10,000 people, say, "Okay, go eat your tea and biscuits," and then get to work for 12 hours using dangerous, lethal chemicals to rush into production glass screens for iPhone. I mean, these are things that I think if we understood the cost of the conditions that we basically impose on these workers through our purchasing of these products, I mean, we would be ashamed.
But isn't that,
frankly, I own an iPad, and I'm ashamed.
Yeah, but hold on.
Of the consequences of that.
But isn't that what 30 years of Reaganomics, the Reagan Revolution, was? It was more about me. It's, you know, worry about me. Don't worry about society. Everything is internalized. Nothing is community. Nothing is social. Everything's about me.
I have to tell you that an American company executive who says that they do not have responsibility to solving America's problems ought to be run out of America. I mean, one of the Apple executives was quoted in the New York Times as saying, as a citizen of the United States, we all have a responsibility to serve our country and to be part of the solutions of the problems that we have in whatever small way we can. We're not saying that the entire burden should be on Apple or on the corporate sector generally, but what we're saying is that everybody has a role. Everybody does a part. And, you know, frankly, if you are a corporation and you're trying to figure out ways of evading responsibility for being a positive force for good, then I don't know what you're doing here.
Yeah, but, you know, we've allowed this to happen for so long. I remember reading Jeff Pfau's book, Global Capitalism, I think it was called. And he had quoted the CEO of Dow Chemical, a guy named Carl Gerstacker. And the quote that he used is, Carl Gerstacker, the CEO of Dow, said, "I've always dreamed of buying an island owned by no nation and establishing a world headquarters for Dow so they could be at truly neutral ground, not beholden to any nation, so that they could, you know, they could operate in the United States as a U.S. citizen, in Japan as a U.S. citizen, in Brazil as a, and they have no allegiance to anyone, just to doing their business."
Well, I think wasn't one of the executives of eBay basically thinking along the same lines, that you would take eBay or I think it was one of these Silicon Valley companies basically offshore so that they would not be subject to regulation by any particular country?
Yeah, I mean, this is what they're taught in these business schools. And you know what? There's part of me that agrees with Rick Santorum. Those schools that Obama wants to send those kids to, they indoctrinate people, and that indoctrination makes them crazy. Because look what these MBAs have done to this country. We've got more MBAs than I think we got machinists. That's a recipe for disaster.
Well, I think what we really need to do is push the basic thematic that President Obama laid out there is that America did not become, when it was at its peak and when it was beginning to work out its issues of inequality and so on. I mean, we had a long fight to try to perfect this thing called America. And when we were moving in the right direction, we were moving in the right direction because we saw ourselves as people who recognized the need to be in this thing together, that we were not just individuals. We were not just crabs in a barrel.
Right.
We are a nation of people with obligations to each other. And it's our collective responsibility to each other that allows all of us to rise together. And that runs counter to conservative philosophy as it's practiced.
Yeah, you use the dreaded C word, collective, that somehow we are part of a society, that we're responsible for our neighbors and they for us. And, you know, that whole that whole Christian thing my mother used to tell me, as for the grace of God, there go I. I should, mm-hmm. you know, I should be part of my society and try and help lift everybody up. So I guess last question I've got for you, because you've written a piece on this. Why isn't anybody, using the P word, poverty? We see 48 million people who are now in poverty. Serious problem. Yeah, we're talking about going to the moon. I mean, they spent more time on going to the moon than they talked about how we're going to get folks out of poverty.
Well, the reason why I wrote that piece is because I've been in meetings where actually consultants have said, you know, you don't talk about poverty, you just talk about the middle class. And you talk about middle class values and aspiring to become a part of the middle class. And I admit, a lot of times I use that same language. But I grew up a poor kid, and I just have never, it's taken me decades to even feel as if I'm a member or call myself a member of the middle class because of where I came from.
Yep, I'm with you there. I grew up on the land where they put the socioeconomic ladder. I wasn't even really on the ladder yet.
Right. Well, exactly right. So, I mean, I think, as I wrote, I think it's important for us to figure out how to have a more direct conversation about poor people and poverty. And let's not assume that because we're talking about the class, that we're also talking about the single mother who's trying to raise a kid as on a McDonald's job. That's a whole different situation. And that single mother needs specific attention and specific needs, and we as a society need to set something up for her so that she can succeed and one day call herself a middle class person. So we need to have that conversation.
Yeah, I would
and
say
we ought not be ashamed for advocating on behalf of the poor.
No,
that's
nothing at all wrong with that. In fact, I would say that we should push for labor law first and foremost that makes sure that if she works 40 hours a week, she's not in poverty.
That's exactly right.
Anyway, the piece is 46 million Americans live in poverty, so why isn't saying the P word? Why isn't anybody saying the P word? We've got a link at thericksmithshow.com written by Isaiah Poole, editor over at ourfuture.org. Isaiah, it's always great talking with you. I appreciate your time.
And let me just mention Keith Kaufman, This Week in Poverty on thenation.com. Great column.
We'll make sure we link to that as well. Thanks so much, Isaiah. Always a pleasure.
Thank you.
Quick break, right back after this. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
I've never been on welfare, and that's one place I won't be. I'll be working as long as my two hands are fit to use. I'll drink my beer in a tavern, sing a little bit of these working men.
Proudly blue in an ocean of red. Rick Smith.
You're listening to the best of the Rick Smith Show. AFSCME Council 13 members, did you know that you have voluntary benefits available to you that you can pay for through the ease of payroll deduction? AFSCME Council 13 offers a voluntary benefits package to help provide money when you or a covered family member incurs one of these life events, accidents, critical illness, disability, or death. No one can avoid life's unfortunate situations. However, AFSCME Council 13 has provided you with the opportunity to ease the financial burden on your family by preparing now. Find out more about Trustmark's voluntary benefits. BBS Benefit Solutions can help you get the security you need. Call BBS at 1-866-902-2561. Again, call BBS at 1-866-902-2561. You're listening to the best of the Rick Smith Show.
Wall Street bankers have such fun. I don't mean merely at their year-end bonus bashes when each one rakes in more bills than a tall tree has leaves, but year-round. For example, one group of scamps are paid to invent crazy investment packages that go bang after unsuspecting suckers, otherwise known as customers, buy them. Call CDOs, collateralized debt obligations. Such packages were the nuclear whoopee cushions that in 2007 crashed the housing market and our entire economy. Yet not a single one of these financial rascals was held accountable by federal authorities. So we commoners have not even been told about the details of the destructive inside jokes they were playing on us. However, a lawsuit filed against Morgan Stanley by a Taiwanese bank has now laid bare one of these prank investment packages titled Stack. This $500 million CDO was literally stacked against those who bought it, including the Taiwan bank, because Morgan's fun-loving packagers deliberately filled it with bad housing loans. Here's the punchline. Morgan Stanley secretly put down a $170 million bet that the load of investment garbage it put in Stack would cause the CDO to fail, which it did. In short, these Wall Street jesters created Stack so Morgan Stanley could bet against it and cash in, even as the bank peddled it around the world as a safe and sound investment. The lawsuit unleashed an especially fun set of exchanges among the bankers over what to name their mischievous CDO. Hitman suggested one, Nuclear Holocaust offered another, but the most telling title idea was A Bag of Excrement. This is Jim Hightower saying, of course, they are the real bags of excrement. Yet by refusing to prosecute them, the government has winked at their hilarity, allowing them to keep doing their slapstick CDO routines.
What do the corporate powers from Wall Street to Walmart have in common? They hate the Hightower Lowdown. You can see why at www.hightowerlowdown.org.
You're listening to the best of the Rick Smith Show.
Exposing GOP hypocrisy, the Rick Smith Show.
I'm so in love with you. But
at least, you know, you can give the president credit for one huge thing already. This week, the president kind of sang that song to the crowd a little bit. Al Green's song. Al was in the crowd, I guess. It has sparked a 490% weekly sales increase for the song, which sold 16,000 downloads in the week of his serenade at the Apollo Theater. So good for the economy. In fact, numbers kind of turning around. Folks are starting to see it. People are liking the Obama message because it makes sense. There are things that I'm not thrilled with, but a handful of things I do differently. But for the most part, I think Americans are getting the pollings are very high. And I believe this massive overreach by the Republicans, this massive overreach to attack workers and pander to the wealth class by the GOP is going to bite them right in the behind, right where it should. Look, you know, this GOP war on workers, this no rights at work agenda that they're going after, it's going to backfire, especially in states like Pennsylvania. You got to know these Republicans have got to be worried. Because union members are going, well, excuse me, why exactly are you attacking us? We voted for you. 51% of the union members in this state voted for Corbett. You think that's going to happen again? Think again. And you look at in last week's State of the Union address, or State of the State address in South Carolina, Nikki Haley, the governor down there, said, we'll make the unions understand full well that they're not needed, not wanted, and not welcome in the state of South Carolina. And you go, really? That's the official tone of the GOP? And the answer is yes. They hate workers. They love investors. They love the Romneys. They don't really care about their people at the bottom. Understand that. And when I saw this story this morning, it just goes, duh. You remember a guy named Doug Holtz Eakin? He happened to be John McCain's chief economist during McCain's run in 2008. Well, he told Think Progress this morning that the economy is picking up. Things are picking up. He actually expects significant growth in the next couple of years, projecting by the end of 2012, GDP to grow above 3% and as high as 3.5%. And that will be the trend, he said. And by 2013, we're faster. He said that he gives Obama credit for the 2009 stimulus package, which he originally disagreed with. thought it wasn't going to work. Now he's looking back going, you know what? It was the right thing to do. It was smart policy. It was good investment. Helped stop the hundreds and hundreds of thousands of jobs that were lost. Helped kind of turn that around. And the graphs, that there are thousands of them out there, show that. Consumer spending dumped. Job creation dumped. The economy was just stagnant and actually constricting. And because we took a little money and said, here, we got to infuse it into the economy. Get demand up. Keep demand stable. Keep people working. It saved us from a depression. And this guy deserves the credit for that. Now, I think that recovery bill should have been bigger to make the recovery a little quicker, a little bit bigger, a little bolder. But with the Republicans in Congress and a number of Democrats, a number of these conservative blue dog Democrats, this is the best he was getting. And he knew it. And he took it. And it saved our economy. It saved this nation. And you got people out here saying, well, it's not enough. It's never enough. The numbers came out today. The economy grew by, 2.8% in the last 3 months of 2011. The folks out there, we got big expectations. Fell short of expectations. Why? Because government stopped spending money. That sent the message to businesses to stop spending money. That sent the message to consumers. You better pull back. Because all of the hostage situations that the Republicans had put us in last year, all of that fighting and all of that bickering and all that sticking their fingers in their ears and kicking and screaming, carrying on and forcing our credit rating to drop, that hurt the economy. And they did that for one reason and one reason only. That's to go after the black guy in the White House. That's all it's about. Limbaugh saying, I hope he fails. And McConnell saying, we're going to make him a one-term president. And they'll do anything that they can do. They'll do anything they can do. Hobble the economy, scorched earth, destroy this nation, just to make him look bad. And what's amazing, what's fantastic is on the foreign policy front, he is kicking their ever-loving behinds. Because he's making the right decisions. He's doing it in a level-headed way. And, you know, hey, look, I wasn't fond of going into Libya either. But you look at it and you go, he did the right thing. We're not involved in there. It's a tough job. But when you got all these little ankle biters, makes it that much tougher. And, you know, you look at the job numbers. Creating some jobs. I mean, he is doing what he can. I mean, you can't grab these private industry folks by the neck and force them to hire, even though they're sitting on trillions of dollars that we've given them. And Clarence sent me an email that, you know, in talking about job numbers, because the Republicans on the trail, they're saying, hey, you know, we're the ones, we can create jobs, and, you know, we know how, and la, la, la. So, you know, Clarence sent me this email of a story from the Wall Street Journal just before Obama became president. And it pointed out the president's past, who had created jobs. And it broke it down in a very interesting way, you know, Democrats, Republicans, and some really interesting numbers just in their theories. Because there have been a number of studies done that when conservative governments take over, you generally have lower growth, you generally have less economic activity, you generally have more higher suicide rates, higher depression rates. It's not my study, it came out of the UK, because when conservative governments come in, they're heaped in pain, they're heaped in constriction, they're heaped in cutting social services, and they're heaped in, well, me. It's all about me, and screw all the rest of you, and the heck with you, and sink or swim. You know, here, by the way, here's an anvil. Hold on to this for me. So it went through and it said, you know, during the Clinton years, Clinton created almost 3 million jobs. Carter created 2.6 million jobs. Johnson, 2.3 million jobs. And then there's Reagan, 2 million jobs. And then Nixon, 1.7. They said Kennedy in his short time, 1.2 million jobs. Truman, 1.1. Then Ford, 745. Bush, 600 and a quarter. Eisenhower, 438,000. And then Bush, 375. Now, that's during their time as president. And they looked at the number. Look at Democrats. Democrats, during that span, during all of those presidencies, created over 10 million jobs. Republicans, 5.8 million jobs. So they broke it down into jobs per day in office. So the 10,000, more than 10,000 days Democrats were in office, they created nearly 1,000 jobs a day. In the 13,000 days that Republicans were in office, they created just 447. So again, you know, I'm just throwing this out for historical precedent. Take it for what it is. It is the past, but it's also an indication of where we may go in the future, because they're going to pursue the same policies. They've got the same ideology. It's the same stuff that got us into this mess. And you could go through number after number. The stock market under Democrats, much higher. And basically, the Reagan made-up misery index, always lower under Democrats, higher under Republicans. Why? Because Republicans want to make sure that the Romneys of the world and the Buffetts and the Gates and the Kochs and the Scaifes and the Coors and the Waltons, all the billionaire class, that they're taken care of first. And that those folks on the bottom, the least of us, they get screwed. And that pulls us all down. Quick break right back after this. 1-888-520-7425. Curious, your thoughts back after this.
Together. The Rick Smith Show.
Hey there, fellow. You're listening to the best of The Rick Smith Show.
Buy the stuff you love with retailers' credit cards. Ditch their high interest rates with the help of PSECU. Move those balances to the PSECU Visa with no transfer fee and a low 2.9 annual percentage rate. Good through December 31st, 2014. PSECU. Financing life is what we do best. Talk with us. Call 800-LOAN-555 or visit PSECU.com/visa for complete program details. Whatever new stuff you bought last year with retailers' high-interest credit cards, let PSECU help you get a fresh new start. Move those balances to the PSECU Visa with no transfer fee and a low 2.9 annual percentage rate. Good through December 31st, 2014. PSECU. Financing life is what we do best. Talk with us. Call 800-LOAN-555. Or visit PSECU.com/visa for complete program details. This credit union is federally insured by the National Credit Union Administration, Equal Opportunity Lender.
You're listening to the best of The Rick Smith Show.
It's time to rearrange.
Keeping the chambers of commerce within their gated communities. The Rick Smith Show.
You can't tell me. We're gonna make it.
Rick, 1-888-520-7425. Check out the website at TheRickSmithShow.com. Question, comment, something on your mind, you can email me, Rick@TheRickSmithShow.com. And it is email Clarence sent. You know, again, there are a whole bunch of interesting little tidbits. And he points out from Harding in 1921 to Bush in 2003. Democrats held the White House for 40 years, Republicans for 42 and a half at that point. And during that time, Republicans had nine Republican presidents, and six of them either had depression or recession. Republicans had a recession / depression in 177 months of their presidencies. Democrats just 32 months. So again, you know, when they're making this case, well, you know, we care about jobs, we care about, you know, we care about the working people, we care about that middle class. And go back to what I said earlier. When conservatives are in power, you have higher rates of suicide, higher rates of depression, because you're basically on your own. And nothing highlights that more than last night when the Republicans at the debate were asked about health care. All the four of them answered this woman's question. Here's the woman's question.
My name is Lynn Frazier, and I live here in Jacksonville. And for the Republican presidential candidates, my question is, I'm currently unemployed, and I found myself unemployed for the first time in 10 years and unable to afford health care benefits. What type of hope can you promise me and others in my position?
All right, that's a good question. You know, what are you gonna do? What's the vision? What's your vision here? How is it going to help me get health care? What are you going to do for me? So Ron Paul pops up. First answer.
Well, it's a tragedy because this is a consequence of the government being involved in medicine since 1965.
What?
When I was growing up, we didn't have a whole lot, but my dad had a small insurance. But medical care costs weren't that much.
What?
And you should have an opportunity. Medical care insurance should be given to you as an individual. So if you're employed or not employed, you just take care of that and you keep it up. When you lose a job, sometimes you lose your insurance. Oh. But the cost high, when you pump money into something like housing, costs and prices go up. If you pump money into education, the cost of education goes up. Uh-huh. When the government gets involved in medicine, you don't get better care, you get cost goes up and it distorts the economy and leads to a crisis. But your medical care should go with you. You should get total deduction on it. It would be so much less expensive. It doesn't solve every single problem, but you're suffering from the consequence of way too much government and the cost going up because government has inflated the cost and we have a government created recession, and that is a consequence of the business cycle.
Speaker again.
Anywhere close to an answer do you find in there? I guess his idea, the government's fault? Going to give you health care? What I took from that, and you know, maybe I'm going to have to put words into his mouth because his were kind of confusing, is you're on your own. It's the government's fault. Government should do nothing. You are on your own. So the woman doesn't have a job. She has no money. But you should buy your own health care. That's his answer. And, well, Nudie kind of goes along the same line.
We need to have a program which would start with, frankly, repealing Obamacare, repealing Dodd-Frank, repealing Sarbanes-Oxley.
Yeah!
And we need to give her a chance to have a job. Second, we need real health reform, not the Obama style, but we need a health reform that allows her to buy in, and Dr. Paul's right. She ought to get the same tax break whether she buys personally or whether she buys through a company. She should also be able to buy into an association so that she's buying with lots of other people, so it's not single insurance, which is the most expensive kind. But you combine those two, reforming the insurance system and getting the economy growing again so people are back at work. You cure an awful lot of America's problems with those two steps, and you put her back in a position where she's in charge of her life. She's not dependent on Barack Obama to take care of her.
I see. So again, buying something, she has no money, and the Republican buzzword. Did you get it? Tax break. She get a tax break. That's all she needs to get health care. A tax break. Come on. It's a good answer. So Romney was next up, and he didn't fail.
If you have insurance, you most likely got it fair. And the reason is your employer gets a deduction for you when they buy the insurance for you. That means that if you change jobs,
deduction guy,
you got to get a new insurance company, most likely. And if you become unemployed, you lose your insurance. That doesn't make sense. And if an individual wants to own their own insurance, they're not part of a big group. And so as a result, they get a very high rate. What we should do is allow individuals to own their own insurance and have the same tax treatment as companies get. You do that, and people like this young woman would be able to own her insurance. The rates would be substantially lower for her buying it individually than if she had to buy it individually today. And we know what it takes to put people back to work. He said some of those things last night, lowering corporate taxes, lowering regulations, opening up all of the above in energy, cracking down on China. He just doesn't do any of those things, and if I'm president, I will do those things.
And it'll put us right back into the mess we've been in that they've created. And I told you the job numbers of the past, that they're saying, look what we did in the past. We want to do it in the future. And again, what you heard him say, more tax breaks. You can own your own policy and we'll give you a tax break. She doesn't have a job, you dim-witted puddle brain nitwits. She doesn't have any money. What is she going to do in the interim? Oh, I'm sorry. No job. Like Romney laid it out. No job, no health care, you die. Bottom line. Doesn't get any simpler than that. Pretty simple right there. And then Santorum has to chime in, and he's on board with the rest of them and has to throw in his.
A
all three of these folks sound great, and I agree with them. I would just add that health savings accounts, which I introduced 20 years ago with John Kasich, is really the fundamental reform of getting consumers back involved in the healthcare system.
Healthcare. Yeah, health savings accounts, which I'm not entirely against. But, you know, he had to throw his point in. Let's go to the phones real quick. Got Arnold on line one. How you doing today, Arnold?
Pretty good, Rick. Good to talk to you.
I appreciate the call. What's up?
I just wanted to let everybody know how I feel about Ron Paul when I hear him talk about how we shouldn't have, you know, socialized health care, or we shouldn't consider any kind of assistance when it comes to health care. He's just basically slapping all of us progressives or liberal Democrats in the face with the progress we have made. And I find it offensive.
I agree. You know, it would be nice to live in the world, whatever fantasy world he's in, and whatever drugs he's prescribing to himself, because, you know, what it is he talks about sounds nice on paper. But in reality, in the real world where the rest of us live, no way in a cold day could it ever work out, unless you wanted to have a feudal system, which is basically what he's talking about. The Romneys in the world, and then the rest of us. That's it.
Yeah, no, it's unacceptable. And listening to your show as a fan, you know, just keep reminding people of that. Just all we can do.
That's why we fight the fight, brother. I appreciate the call.
Love you guys.
Thanks so much. You know, I look at this, and again, you know, it would be great to live in Paul world. It would great, like I talked about when we were in New Hampshire. The Paul bots believe in freedom, and who could be against freedom? Especially when freedom means I can throw up in the lobby of the hotel and have somebody else clean up after me. It means freedom and liberty means I can go trash the hotel, throwing my stuff all over, leaving, you know, garbage everywhere, so somebody else has to come and clean up after me, because nothing says freedom like vomiting in a lobby. Nothing. Nothing says freedom like that. But that's the world that the Paul bots live in. It's all about them. It's about me. I don't care about those working stiffs who are gonna, those people who are gonna have to come behind me. It's all about me. It's all about now. And look, he's the comedy relief. He's the court jester. He's the, you know, he's the class clown. He's the guy everybody laughs at, not with, at. And at some point, hopefully he goes away. You know, there was part of me that goes, when his kid got stopped at the airport, they would have taken him away. There's a place called Guantanamo Bay. Good place for him, for the both of them. Might actually be interested in keeping it open if they would. Anyway, if you missed any portion of the program, you can go to thericksmithshow.com, download the podcast. Or if you've got a smartphone, you can get the Stitcher app and take the program on the go. We're going to take a break, come back. When we come back, we're going to talk about union density. Fact of the matter is, as much as the Republicans are attacking it, actually, a decent increase. Right back after this.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
It's The Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Gibbonsburg.
You're listening to the best of The Rick Smith Show.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News, a production of Diversified Media Enterprises. I'm Doug Cunningham.
Striking New York City school bus drivers demonstrated their fighting spirit in a rally that drew thousands of people supporting their strike. Striker Carmen Perez says the workers are determined to win the strike over job protections.
Doesn't matter if it rains, it is cold, it's snowing, we're going to go all the way to the end. We're going to fight it.
Amalgamated Transit Union Local 1181 President Michael Cordiello told a local New York City TV station that the strike isn't over wages.
It's much more about the lies about whether it's legal or not, or whether they can negotiate with us or not. This is about union busting, in my opinion, and they should come to the table and stop the nonsense.
As low-wage workers begin to rise up in collective action to improve their conditions, restaurant workers face especially tough challenges when it comes to the federal minimum wage and their tips. In most states, tips must be counted toward that minimum, meaning a very low cash wage. Melinda Tuhus has more.
Thank you.
This high road to profitability in the long run creates less turnover for these employers, higher profitability, and higher productivity among workers. California is one of seven states in the union that actually do not have a difference between the minimum wage for regular workers and tipped workers. In California, all workers, regardless of whether they earn tip, earn a minimum of $8 an hour. Now, California is the largest and fastest growing restaurant industry of any state in the country. And so the argument that having a regular minimum wage for tipped workers would kill business just doesn't hold water.
This story was underwritten by a grant from the Burger Marx Foundation.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Standing tall against the multinational corporate agenda, The Rick Smith Show.
Seen in the State of the Union address, look at workers' rights. It'd be nice to talk about the Employee Free Choice Act again. This year, the last year, 2011, looks like the numbers of union members jumped a little bit. The private sector added 110,000 new members. And I look at this, and you look at the 61,000 and declining in the public sector, a direct result of the Republicans. They're basically turning the guns on government. This cut, gut, and punish, this slash and burn wherever we can, anything they can do to hold up this recovery. But lost 61,000 in the public sector, but added 100. Members in the private sector. Private sector density remain even. It's all about, and I like the fact that the guy in the National Labor Relations Board has said we're gonna do what the board is supposed to do, and that's help workers, help them become part of a union, help them with collective bargaining. That's the right direction. And when I see an election win, I want to talk to the folks who are doing. That's why I've asked Chris Calabrese from CWA Local 1109 in New York, to come talk to us about the organizing drive that he was a part of. Chris, thanks for taking time for me.
Hey, how are you?
I'm good.
Thanks for having me on.
You know, I look at this, and it's not often I see a big company like Cablevision where workers have been successful against the attacks.
No, it isn't. You know, in this day and age, the way things have been in this country, it is very, very difficult to organize. But I think that what we did yesterday and really over the last 6 months and before that proves that if we really, really put our nose to the grindstone and work at it and prepare and be organized ourselves and really be committed to it, that it can be done. And I think that workers in this country are finally seeing that Republicans and corporations, and to me they're one and the same, you know, they don't have their best interest in mind, and that the union is the gateway to the middle class.
Absolutely. And I look at the vote result, 180-86. That's extremely impressive.
Yeah, let me tell you something, Rick. I was not expecting that. I am very conservative when we figure out where we think the votes are going to be, and I thought we were going to be in around the 160 range. And to just really have a blowout like that really shows the commitment of the organizing committee and the Cablevision workers, and that they got the word out the way that it should be, and that they were leaders in the workplace. That's the only way that that's possible.
Yeah, I saw a story, and they were talking to one of the technicians who said he was waiting for 13 years for this. Did this campaign take that long?
Well, they've had failed. He works for, I know the person you're speaking about, and he works for Cablevision for 13 years, and there was a failed organizing drive in 2004, and they tried to do it in 2008, and there was something in the late 90s before I was around, and so I don't remember that one. But I guess the 13 years was the failed drives, and finally we got a successful drive.
Now, the company, I guarantee they didn't go quietly. More of the forced meetings, the group meetings, the one-on-one meetings, that kind of stuff. Basically management saying, if you vote for this, you'll probably lose your job or who knows what. Did you encounter much of that?
Oh, we encountered tons of that. It was really a blistering assault. We never saw a company that did so many captive audience meetings with their workers. They did it every day for 42 days straight from the time we filed. For 2 to 4 hours a day.
Let me ask you this. You know, one of the things that one of the frames I hear quite often, especially from Gowdy, one of the representatives from South Carolina, who just said, you know, we can't have these quick elections. The NLRB new rules that we actually have elections in a reasonable amount of time is to them unreasonable because it doesn't give them what they say enough time to talk to their employees. And, you know, personally, I think it's ridiculous that they would even begin to say that because, you know, they had from day one to talk to their employees and treat them well. But these captive meetings gives them plenty of time to talk to it.
There's plenty of time to talk to them, and really that's a bunch of nonsense. Even though we filed for the election on December 16th, the truth of the matter is the company knew that the workers were trying to organize from back in September. They were just too cocky to believe that we would ever get the support to file for an election. So if they wanted to start in September, they could have. And the truth of the matter is all corporations in this country, it's not like they're blindsided the day of the petition. They know what's coming. And what they really want to do is they like to ratchet up the pressure those last 42 days and put a lot of fear in the workers. And so that's why someone would make a comment like that.
Listen to the Rick Smith Show. We're here with Chris Calabrese. He is an organizer with CWA, the Communication Workers of America, Local 1109 in New York. They've got a website for this campaign, thecablevision99.org. We've got a link at thericksmithshow.com. Just click on Chris's name. You know, in this campaign, and I don't know, I'm hoping you'll be able to tell me, what were the main reasons? Because I find, you know, during the time that I've spent around organizers, it's basically the treatment of workers, not so much wages or benefits, but really the respect, the voice, those kind of things. In this case, what did you find to be the common theme, the main theme among the workers?
I mean, I think you said it right there, Rick, is dignity and respect and coming to work every day. And I'm using someone else's words, but they felt like they were treated like the help. They never had a say in anything. Benefits change, systems change, work rules change. And it was always good for the company and never for the workers. They had no say in that. And any time they tried to do something about something that was unfair, you know, they were pushed back and people were fired. And their wages and benefits are lower than the rest of the industry. And so all that stuff resonated with them.
So you're going to give them an opportunity to raise wages, get a little bit better benefits. You know what unions are about, wages, hours, conditions.
Exactly. But we know it won't be easy. Yesterday was a big victory, but the truth of the matter is we're going to be in another battle to get a contract with them. Cablevision already sent out a public statement last night, and their public statement, I think, is telling of how they're thinking, is they said that they're very disappointed by the vote. They don't think that CWA has anything to offer these workers, and we are analyzing our next move and considering all our options.
Oh, and we know what that means.
We're going to try and break this up.
That means a contract negotiation that will probably take 10 years. Because, you know, and the reason I brought up the Employee Free Choice Act at the beginning is one of the main tenets. And I think the tenet that business and the Chamber of Commerce was most afraid of was that contract portion. to where you've got a year or 90 days or however long the period was to sit down and hammer out an agreement so you don't have these long drawn out court delays. You don't have these days arguing over where a period or an apostrophe should be.
Exactly. Most organizing drives in this country, when you're victorious, it's usually at a small margin. And the next move the companies like to do is to take their time in contract negotiations in the hopes that once a year passes, that they can get a decert election. So the Employee Free Choice Act would have stopped that if we could have ever gotten that law passed. And I think it's a fair law. We don't need... If you buckle down and work, you don't need a year or 2 years to come to a contract agreement. You can do it pretty quickly when two parties want to really bargain in good faith.
Absolutely. And, you know, it makes no sense that they can't come together. But, you know, what this does, in my opinion, and I think as a nation we've fostered this idea, and I think it's the business community who's really rammed it down our throats, that somehow workers who are organized, they stand in contrast to what the company's trying to do, that somehow there's this adversarial relationship, where in other countries like Germany, they have union members who are sitting on their boards of trustees. They have union members in on every decision because the workers and management in those countries, they have a common goal of making their company better. But here in this country, I got to believe it comes from the top down, because I don't know any working people who are happy with it. But that seems to be the path that we've taken in this country. Curious your thoughts.
Well, I have two thoughts on that. One, I think that it's a misconception to think that we don't want to work with companies. Every unionized worker, whatever company they work for, they want to have pride in their company, and they want their company to do well. We both need each other. They need the labor, and we need the company. We want the company to do well. We want them to make profits so that we can be paid accordingly and have job security. And then the second thought on the way we think in this country compared to other countries is I think you hit something right on the head. Germany, for instance, is one of those countries where union leaders sit on the boards of the companies. Think about that. Germany, the same country that less than 100 years ago Hitler ruled, has it in their constitution that it's against the constitution to harass or intimidate or retaliate against workers who try to organize. The right to organize is in their constitution in Germany.
Yeah, good luck on getting that something like that done here. I guess the last question I have for you is, do you have a right? Do you think we legally have a right to join and form unions collectively? And do you think it actually exists?
You know, we have a legal right to join a union. But what it should also say is, if you can run into a burning building to get there, if you can jump over alligators to get there, I mean, it's a legal right in the most minuscule way. It is so hard to do, and everything is against you to do it. And that's why when we have a win like we had yesterday, that's why it's so special, because you know how hard you work and that's the hurdles that you had to do to get there.
Yeah.
So we do have a legal right, but it's always an uphill battle.
Chris, I appreciate the time. I wish you nothing but the best in the path going forward. Congratulations on the win. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Chris Calabrese, organizer with CWA Local 1109. The website, thecablevision99.org. Of course, we've got a link at thericksmithshow.com. Just click on Chris's name. Quick break, right back after this. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
Con in conservatism. Rick Smith.
You're listening to the best of the Rick Smith Show. AFSCME Council 13 members, did you know that you have voluntary benefits available to you that you can pay for through the ease of payroll deduction? AFSCME Council 13 offers a voluntary benefits package to help provide money when you or a covered family member incurs one of these life events, accidents, critical illness, disability, or death, no one can avoid life's unfortunate situations. However, AFSCME Council 13 has provided you with the opportunity to ease the financial burden on your family by preparing now. Find out more about Trustmark's voluntary benefits. BBS Benefit Solutions can help you get the security you need. Call BBS at 1-866-902-2561. Again, call BBS at 1-866-902-2561. You are listening to the best of the Rick Smith Show.
Wall Street bankers have such fun. I don't mean merely at their year-end bonus bashes when each one rakes in more dollar bills than a tall tree has leaves, but year-round. For example, one group of scamps are paid to invent crazy investment packages that go bang after unsuspecting suckers, otherwise known as customers, buy them. Called CDOs, collateralized debt obligations, such packages were the nuclear whoopee cushions that in 2007 crashed the housing market and our entire economy. Yet, not a single one of these financial rascals was held accountable by federal authorities. So we commoners have not even been told about the details of the destructive inside jokes they were playing on us. However, a lawsuit filed against Morgan Stanley by a Taiwanese bank has now laid bare one of these prank investment packages titled Stack. This $500 million CDO was literally stacked against those who bought it, including the Taiwan Bank, because Morgan's fun-loving packagers deliberately filled it with bad housing loans. Here's the punchline. Morgan Stanley secretly put down a $170 million bet that the load of investment garbage it put in Stack would cause the CDO to fail, which it did. In short, these Wall Street jesters created Stack so Morgan Stanley could bet against it and cash in, even as the bank peddled it around the world as a safe and sound investment. The lawsuit unleashed an especially fun set of exchanges among the bankers over what to name their mischievous CDO. Hitman suggested one, Nuclear Holocaust offered another, but the most telling title idea was A Bag of Excrement. This is Jim Hightower saying, of course, they are the real bags of excrement. Yet by refusing to prosecute them, the government has winked at their hilarity, allowing them to keep doing their slapstick CDO routines.
What do the corporate powers from Wall Street to Walmart have in common? They hate the Hightower Lowdown. You can see why at www.hightowerlowdown.org.
You're listening to the best of the Rick Smith Show.
You know what it means when they pay you minimum wage? You know what they're trying to tell you? It's like, hey, if I could pay you less, I would.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Check out the website at thericksmithshow.com. So Ford Motor Company announced record annual profits, $20 billion. That's what they made in 2011. They also announced their net income of $13.6 billion in the fourth quarter. This marks the third consecutive year of profitability for Ford Motor Company after nearly going bankrupt in 2008. And you think about what Obama did with the other auto companies. By saving them, understand what would have happened had we let GM and Chrysler go down. Had they gone, the suppliers that funneled parts and materials to those two companies, they would have gone down too. And that would have taken Ford with them. And I think you have to realize that if they're interlocked at a certain point, because they deal with the same supply chain, they deal with the same suppliers, and if two of the three were to go down, the third one, you know, was going to come with it. So, you know, a big part of this success at Ford has to be given, you know, to Obama for saying, we're not going to let the U.S. car companies take a dive. Now, you can make the argument, and I have, you know, that the workers, they're the ones who saved the company, because they're the ones who, again, gave another series of concessions. You know, we keep hearing about all these rich American auto workers. Understand, for the last 20, 25 years, the auto industry, those working people have been giving concession after concession after concession after concession. So when I hear the Romneys of the world saying, wow, they're greedy, it makes me want to smack him.
The unions asked for too much, and the management gave too much,
And they all said, we're going to pass along the burdens to the future.
Yeah.
We're just going to keep on adding more and more cost. You see numbers like $70 an hour was being paid for people on the lines. And ultimately, you can't compete globally. You can't compete with foreign manufacturers if your compensation level is completely out of alignment.
Completely out of alignment.
And the area that it became really a problem was work rules.
Work rules.
And then, of course, the legacy costs, the retiree costs became overwhelming. And the companies started borrowing more money to try and pay for all this. And finally, it couldn't go on forever.
No, just couldn't go on forever. Because you know what? When you pay your workers and those old people, how long do you have to keep old people around? Now, I look at the story I talked about not too long ago in Germany. They actually, their pay, $67.14 an hour. $67.14 an hour for a German auto worker. Here in the U.S., $33.77. That's what the German auto companies pay their workers here in the U.S. That's what their benefits and health care and their pensions and everything. So when he says $70 an hour, which it wasn't $70 an hour, and that's just completely outrageous, Germany, $67 an hour. And what I'm amazed at is you've got a guy who's running around saying what we want, what we need, the only way we can compete is if you, workers, work for less. And no health care, no pensions, lower wages. That's the only way American companies compete. That's the world he wants to take us to. Instead of bringing everybody out, he wants to tear us completely down. And I love playing this clip because had it been the Republicans' view, had the Republicans had their way, GM, Chrysler, and I guarantee you Ford would have gone down.
Volkswagen just invested in Tennessee in a right-to-work state at a low cost with less health care. Why should we prop others up when other companies can compete in this marketplace? It's time to let these people learn the lesson.
So here's this is the scenario that they've set up. This is the Republican view. Understand this for election time. I'm telling you right now. Because Romney's saying, look, we just can't compete. Those high wages can't compete. Look what the Germans have been able to do. In their country, they pay their auto workers $67 an hour. They outsource jobs to the U.S., and they pay U.S. workers $33 an hour. We're stealing jobs from the Germans. And now you've got an American auto industry who was competitive with the German industry. The workers were treated the same. Yet they were allowed to come in here and they were courted by Republican governors and Republican congressmen and Republican senators who said, yeah, come to our southern states. Come to Alabama. Come to Tennessee. Because Volkswagen invested in Tennessee. Right to work state. Less wage. Less health care. Oh, and don't forget the $1 billion that the state of Tennessee gave to Volkswagen. Don't forget that. So what was set up by Republicans, understand, they're going to destroy your standard of living. They believe in a two-class system. They believe in us and them. Them having all of the resources, all of the money, all of the advantage, all of the opportunity, and us doing whatever it is they want us to do. So when I look at this and I go, this was a masterfully set up screw job. We were competitive with the Germans. We were building cars at the same cost, same quality, right there. We were all right there. Workers in both countries were doing very well. We had a prosperous economy. Everything was coming around. And then we brought in the Japanese car companies who started undercutting our labor. Because in Japan, they make high wages too there. That's the reason they came here. Exploitable labor. Yeah, great. We can get cheap labor in those non-union states. Oh, yes. And then the Germans said, oh, yeah, we can cut our labor costs in half because those Americans are dumb. They're too stupid to realize how our workers have it and how most of their workers used to have it until now. So it's not surprising to me that someone like Nikki Haley would say, we don't need those unions around. We've got you people brainwashed to believe you don't need them. And if we had them around, they might tell you what a good thing it is, and you might actually, get a thought in your head. But think about it, man. I mean, it's amazing the scam that they pulled on us. It's just mind-blowing. And that we signed NAFTA. So we thought we'll do like Germany does. Here's a great idea. We'll do what Germany does. And we'll move those auto plants into Mexico. And we'll take advantage of that cheap labor, thus pulling the wage of everybody down. But it's competition. It's competition, Rick. But yet the price of the car, one made in the U.S. and one made in Mexico, same price. Even though the labor was completely, completely different. And who walked away? Well, the wealth class. The Romneys of the world. The investors. The people who tell you that work is shifting money from one pocket to another. The people that tell you, oh, my aching back, I got to carry these money bags around. That's the world they're leading us to, man. Sad, sad, sad. And I saw this story, Washington Post of all places. It's called The Federal Coach. And headlined by a guy named Tom Fox, dealing with a passive-aggressive leaders. And basically he's talking about a bad boss. A guy who's snarky, a guy who's, you know, going to, oh, yeah, you're going to sign up for that? Oh, that's an interesting idea. And the advice that he gives is not the advice that I would have given. But understand, he's saying that in the federal workplace, you can't go confront somebody, because you don't want to burn bridges. And I say the whole reason that you have a union, number one, is so you don't have these problems. If someone notices there's a problem with a boss, and a lot of number of people have it, there's a process for that. Not only does it help the individual workers, it actually helps the company get rid of a bad boss, someone who's going to bring down morale. But let's not talk about how we can help companies. He says, you know, first thing he says is, you know, if someone tells you something that you don't like, or, you know, don't take it personally. Eh, you're too sensitive. I think about my aunt who works in a non-union facility. And they'll never, the office people will never, ever do that. Now, the plant where she works, those folks are unionized, and they'd never put up with it. So the boss of the plant said something to my aunt, and she said, you know, I really don't appreciate that. And he told her to go do that thing that people do with the F word herself. Her boss tells her, oh, you're just too sensitive. That was her recourse. Nothing. So his advice, if you're in a situation like this, and this is beautiful because, you know, this is where they're moving us to. This is where we're training kids to, you know, to not question authority and just do what we're told and not to be too sensitive. He says, of course, that may be too difficult for your manager to change. Because after all of that aggression pointed toward you is not his fault. It's yours, of course, because he just might not change. So you're going to have to accept it. And he says you might have to find a mentor who can help you navigate the situation more effectively. But it may be just as likely that you need to leave the bad boss. So you got to quit your job. Is that what it is? Mind-blowing. Absolutely mind-blowing. But, you know, this is what we're teaching kids. This is what we're teaching workers, that you don't have a voice in the job. You have to deal with it. Don't be oversensitive. And I say BS to that, man. You got rights, and you should stand up for them. And that's why I'm glad to see those folks at Cablevision said, you know, enough is enough. Because time and time again, you know what I find to be the reason, the number one reason, people put their jobs on the line, put their livelihoods on their line, put their families on the line, because they're treated like garbage. And employers know, where are you going to go, especially in this economy? Good for them. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk with Josh Holland, Joshua Holland from Alternet. He's also the host of Alternet Radio Hour with Joshua Holland, airing in D.C. on WEAC Radio. Quick break, back after this. With my microphone, I do a super show. I wear a cowboy hat. It is my business hat. I'm up till 1 a.m. I must tell you that I'm a man with a mission. The Rick Smith Show, teaching America for the better. You're listening to the best of The Rick Smith Show.
Buy the stuff you love with retailers' credit cards. Ditch their high interest rates with the help of PSECU. Move those balances to the PSECU Visa with no transfer fee and a low 2.9 annual percentage rate. Good through December 31st, 2014. PSECU. Financing life is what we do best. Talk with us. Call 800-LOAN-555 or visit pseCU.com/visa for complete program details. Whatever new stuff you bought last year with retailers' high-interest credit cards, let PSECU help you get a fresh new start. Move those balances to the PSECU Visa with no transfer fee and a low 2.9 annual percentage rate. Good through December 31st, 2014. PSECU. Financing life is what we do best. Talk with us. Call 800-LOAN-555 or visit pseCU.com/visa for complete program details. This credit union... federally insured by the National Credit Union Administration, Equal Opportunity Lender.
You're listening to The Smith Show.
Earth. Sky.
Today, the Ring of Fire, a long chain of volcanoes and other tectonically active structures surrounding the Pacific Ocean.
The chain makes a ring around the Pacific Ocean, along the western coast of South and North America, the eastern coast of Asia, and the northern coast of Antarctica. Ring of Fire is a good name because it's one of the most geologically active areas on Earth.
There are more than 450 active and dormant volcanoes within the Ring of Fire. Many were created where dense ocean plates collide and slide under lighter continental plates. The material from the ocean floor melts as it enters the Earth's interior, and then rises to the surface as magma from a volcano.
Noteworthy volcanoes that dot the Ring of Fire include Mount St. Helens in the U.S., Mount Fuji in Japan, and Mount Pinatubo in the Philippines. Since 1850, approximately 90% of the 16 most powerful volcanic eruptions on Earth happened along the Ring of Fire.
The majority of Earth's earthquakes occur in the Ring of Fire, too. The largest earthquake ever recorded on Earth was the 9.5 magnitude earthquake that struck Chile on May 22nd of 1960.
Despite the high levels of volcanic and seismic activity, millions of people live among the breathtaking landscapes of the Ring of Fire. Scientists are currently working with government officials to help nations in the region improve their response to natural disasters and build their resiliency. Earth Sky is a clear voice for science.
We're at earthsky.org.
You're listening to the best of the Rick Smith Show.
On the flip-flops, as it relates to trust, I don't know that he'd go on to be President Obama, given his record. I mean, when there is a question about whether you're running for the White House or running for the Waffle House, you've got a real problem with the American people.
Darling, you've got to let me know. Should I stay or should I go?
Well, you know, in the case of Huntsman, who that clip was, he went. He got the message and... well, he went. Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Remember, check out the website, therickSmithShow.com. So this frame that the Romney campaign keeps throwing out there, that they're the job creators, they know how to create jobs, and the reason we should put Mitzi in the White House is because, well, he knows how to create jobs, and he's done it before because he's a businessman and, you know, blah, 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 blah. Reality, be damned. That's why I've asked Joshua Holland, senior editor and senior writer over at Alternet, also the host of Alternet Radio Hour with Joshua Holland, airing in the Washington, D.C. area over on We Act Radio. Joshua, thanks for taking time for me.
Hey, Rick. Thanks for having me.
You know, I look at this whole job creator thing, BS. I can't think of any other word but BS.
It's a way to just get us to not talk about the issues. I mean, it's really that simple. And they use it for everything. You know, you can talk about taxing the top earners. You can talk about corporate taxes. Environmentalism destroys jobs. It's just a way to avoid having a substantive discussion about these issues.
You know, and I'm thankful to Newt Gingrich because you knew this was probably going to be Obama's attack line because it's true. But I'm glad that Gingrich has been the one to do it because, you know, I remember going back to the 80s talking about this kind of stuff going on, Romney and, you know, people like him taking up companies, you know, sucking them up, hostile takeovers, stealing their pensions, loading them with debt, and then cutting them off to die. And then, of course, making a whole bunch of money in fees and all kind of stuff. On the backside, them always winning, me always losing. And I'm glad we're seeing this now.
Yes, I am too. And I mean, it's, of course, there's a certain amount of hypocrisy. Newt Gingrich is on the board of one of Bain Capital's biggest competitors on an advisory board. But look, he's bringing these issues up. We're talking about it, and we got to thank Newt for doing that. You know, it's funny that you talked about how these leveraged buyout firms in the 80s, because that's what Bain is doing, they got such a bad name, and, you know, we remember the junk bond kings and all this stuff going on. they got such a bad name that they reinvented themselves as private equity firms. And, you know, Romney wants to talk about the very few deals that he did that were known as venture capital deals. And that's not what he did for the most part at Bain. So he wants to talk about Staples. Staples is a company that they invested money early on. They stuck with it. They wanted to grow the company. And nobody has any problems with that.
I
and
don't.
That represents most of the so-called jobs that Mitt Romney created. What he did most of the time was these leveraged buyout deals where they take a company, they buy it, but they don't really buy it. They put down a little fraction. And then they finance the rest, but they're not borrowing the money. In other words, Bain doesn't borrow the money. The debt goes on to the company that they acquire.
Yep.
So then they strip it down. They raid the pension fund. They lay off employees. And they run up the debt to the point where it cuts the company's tax burden in half. So it's long-term versus short-term. And then they pocket the difference in all of these fees, and they get out before it crashes. They leave these companies with very, very, very heavy debt loads. But what do they care? Because they've made 2% management fees and 20% of the short-term profits.
Yeah, and you know, the other part of this that nobody seems to be focusing on is when they go through bankruptcy and they write off all these debts, we end up, as taxpayers, holding part of that burden. And when the pension funds go bust because they basically raided it and borrowed from it, we end up picking that up as well through the PBGC, which is horribly underfunded.
That's right. And I mean, this is their strategy. This is their business strategy. You know, Bain never acquired a company that they didn't then start a fight with labor over, you know, again, by raiding pension funds for the most part, forcing employees to take salary cuts while they started to pocket these very, very, very rich fees. So this idea that, you know, Mitt Romney wants to talk about Staples is a very specific and intentional way to distract us from a discussion about the leveraged buyout business, which is just as insidious today as it was in the 1980s.
Well, let's talk about Staples for a minute, because I got to be honest with you. I don't know that those are the kind of jobs I want. You know, they're jobs, I get it. Yeah, they pay, you know, what, 10, 12 bucks an hour?
Well, no, they start at $7 and $8 an hour.
I mean, when you're there, I mean, if you're a career-long person, it's, what, 10, 12 bucks an hour? Is that enough
they
to raise a family?
14 maybe, but yes, they're McJobs. They're and this is another thing that I think is important to talk about. This is a key point. They always want to talk about raw numbers of jobs as if jobs are generic, as if there aren't good-paying jobs, decent jobs with job security, with benefits, and crappy McJobs that are like working as a fry chef. And, you know, you hit the hammer on the Staples. I mean, most of those jobs are low-wage jobs that are hard to raise a family on.
Well, and not just Staples. I mean, the other two that he throws out as, you know, the big success stories is Sports Authority and Domino's Pizza. Again, you know, when I think of a good, solid, middle-class job that you're going to be able to buy a house and raise a family and put kids through college, none of those are those jobs in my opinion.
I agree. And the sad thing is that we've added during the recovery a lot more jobs in the lower 40% of the wage distribution than we have in the upper. So this is part of the shift from a, you know, balanced economy with manufacturing to a service economy with a very, very wealthy financial services at the top.
Are you surprised at the way Romney's been running this campaign? I mean, he went into South Carolina basically saying, look, the reason our auto industry was in trouble is they were greedy workers and they wanted too much. We should be a country that works for lower wages and no health care and no pensions. That seems to be the positions that he's taking. I mean, he's not saying it directly. Well, maybe he is.
I mean, he is.
The unions asked for too much and the management gave too much. And they all said, we're going to pass along the burdens to the future. We're just going to keep on adding more and more cost. You see numbers like $70 an hour.
$70 an hour for those auto workers. And we're going to, you know, have to pay those legacy costs for those old people.
Meanwhile, Mitt makes $57,000 a day.
Yeah, but don't talk about that. Come on. He's one of us. He's unemployed. He's just like you and me. He walks. In fact, he told us he walks the same streets.
He's worried about a pink slip.
But,
the thing is that I'm not surprised because it's a GOP primary. This is the kind of rhetoric, this red meat rhetoric, that the base has been conditioned to accept. You know, you can look at Fox. It's a 24/7 propaganda channel vilifying, you know, organized labor and liberals and, you know, the things that provide some minimal social safety net in this country as the entitlement culture, et cetera, these are the base voters, and they are conditioned to buy into these things at, to their own detriment. I mean, this is the classic kind of, liberal criticism that, you know, the use of the conservative rhetoric that we see, causes people to not see where their own interests are and actually vote against their own interests. And it'll be interesting to see whether he can actually pivot. I think that we all agree that Romney will be, in all likelihood, the eventual nominee. If he can pivot to a more centrist tack when the, when we get to the general, and of course this is all setting up the Obama campaign, because we know the narratives that the Democrats are going to take, and you know, they're putting up all these softballs that they're eventually going to smack.
Well, and they should. I mean, at least you hope, if they run any kind of campaign. And judging from the last time they ran a campaign, I thought it was one of the best I've ever seen. I hope they do, because if this guy takes power and the Republicans control Congress, we are in a world of hurt in this country.
Well, we also have two Supreme Court justices who are 76 and 74. One had cancer. You know, you're right. You're absolutely right. There's a lot at stake in this election. We say that every election, but I think it's definitely true. And if you look at, you know, how slow and sluggish this so-called economic recovery is, it can be killed. If we implement a lot of cuts to spending programs, et cetera, you know, they can do extraordinary amounts of damage with this vulnerable economy.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're here with Joshua Holland, senior writer and editor over at alternet.org. He's also the host of Alternet Radio Hour with Joshua Holland, airing in the Washington, D.C. area on We Act Radio. We've got links at thericksmithshow.com. You know, Josh, one of the things that I've been really kind of amazed at is the fluency, the way it just flows off of Newt's tongue, the food stamp president, and all of these buzzwords that we know basically just, you know, pandering to the angry white guy.
You know, I think that Newt's got two things going on here. He's, of course, speaking in racist, you know, dog whistles to pander to that white guy, but he's also, this is all part of a trap. Newt wanted to be called on that by the media. If you look at his performance in these debates, he has just been smacking around the host, the moderators, and getting incredible ovations from the debate audiences every time he does it. So I think that he actually laid that out as a trap, and he was hoping that somebody like Juan Williams would call him on it so that he could then savage Juan Williams. These are his best moments in these debates. It was interesting, in last night's debate, you kept seeing, you know, Newt kind of looking for something to get upset about, and when it never came, it never materialized, he just said, well, screw it, we'll just attack Wolf Blitzer anyway. It didn't work because the audience wasn't really energized by the supposed slight that Wolf Blitzer had had committed.
And good for him for standing up for himself. But I thought that crowd was more of a pro Romney crowd than a pro Gingrich crowd, which is what I thought.
In the same position on the planet as North America does.
Yep.
When in point of fact, it, you know, way back when I was just a, you know, little baby DJ, and I got to take that first trip to Europe, it blew my mind to realize that my home in Alabama was on roughly an equivalent line with Rome, you know, with the sunny Mediterranean.
Yep.
And that's, you know, about as far south in Europe as you can get and still be Europe.
Yep.
But yep. Germany's got more sunshine than we do here in America.
Well, apparently he doesn't remember the stories of World War II about the German winters and the POWs suffering through those winters, and that's just a small portion of what we've heard about the German winters.
And you know, Kevin, I know because I even had a Skype contact from one of our an American expatriate living in Germany, and we've got German listeners. And whenever this podcast goes up and they're listening to it and they get to the part where I talk about the American radio host who says that Germany gets more sunlight than the United States of America, I don't know what swearing in German sounds like, but I think if I just stuck my, if at the right time I just walked outside and listened, I could hear distantly some, you know, probably professional grade swearing going on. That is the level of stupid that this, that people of decent brains have to contend with in this country. That is why we can't do anything about climate change. That's why we can't do anything about anything. Because the right wing has leveraged all the stupid.
Well, they proved that 8 years ago when Sarah Palin was a presidential candidate.
Oh, sweet Jesus. I was out today, you know, doing the stuff to pay bills, and we were in a line to turn into the shopping center behind a Mercedes-Benz S430 or something like that, okay?
Yep.
Nice-looking car.
Yeah.
And it still had a round sticker up at the top center of the rear windshield that said McCain Palin. And, of course, the obligatory West Virginia license plate. And I looked at Agnes and I said, oh, please let me follow him. I just want to see him get out of the car. I want to see what they look like. I promise I won't say anything to him, honey. Bob, go park the car.
Yeah.
She's such a killjoy sometimes. No, but I did. Because I expected him to get out of the car in clown clothes. Okay, so you voted for McCain and Palin 8 years ago. 4 years ago, I'm sorry. You voted for McCain and Palin 4 years ago, but we've had 4 years in which Republicans have even figured out that she was a moron.
Yeah, when Fox News fires you, there's really a problem.
Yeah, and when 4 years later, you're still riding around with that sticker on your car, you know, you're trying... Remember the old T-shirts that had the finger pointing either one way or the other?
I'm with stupid. Yep.
Well, that McCain-Palin sticker is the modern... No, that's I am stupid.
Exactly.
I mean, and it's not just I am stupid, Kevin. It's I am stupid and damn proud of it.
Yep.
Oh!
But, Bob, that seriously is why the world looks at this country and shakes their head. It's a collective, like you're saying, the Germans. That's why we do not have one of the many reasons, I shouldn't say, you know, sole reason, more important things like starting unneeded wars across the globe. But that's one of the reasons, is our attitude toward the rest of the world. We think we know it all while we know very little. And the rest of the world has figured out that they don't know a whole lot either, but they're trying to learn more. And we're still going on as if we know everything. So, very sad. Very sad that someone 4 years from that election and what's gone on since then and Sarah Palin, all of what Sarah Palin said, if I had that sticker on my car, I'd be embarrassed.
But all of these things, you know, they're like icebergs. You know, most of the iceberg is under the water. When you see one car with McCain Palin on it, you know that there are millions of them.
Yep.
You know, when you see... Sorry about all the site references. I apologize.
No problem.
When you see one cockroach,
yep,
you know that you've got thousands of them.
Exactly. Yep.
Now, see, lucky for us, we don't get fooled with by the right-wing hate media, or else there'd be a story tomorrow that... And Bob Kincaid compares Republicans to cockroaches. Yes! Absolutely!
When asked if the quote was correct, Kincaid replied, yes, absolutely. Oh, God.
Yeah, see, those progressives, they're not very civil. They want civility, but then they talk like that.
Nothing uncivil about that. I could call them a lot worse things. So, I just keep doing what you're doing, though.
Well, we're trying to. We are absolutely trying to. And this is more off-air stuff. I don't know what's going on with that PayPal business you're dealing with. I mean, bobkincaid@gmail.com.
Yep.
Or, you know, you just go to the Horn site and push the button.
Well, back then...
If your access software works that way.
Yeah, well, back then when I went to the Horn site, it wouldn't allow me to do it for some reason. So I just went through PayPal. You've kind of updated your website now, and I think it'll probably work on there now. But either way, I'll resend it. It's just I wanted to send it to you and see if you visually could see any problems with it. And it baffles me just as much. It's saying I sent that donation to him before. No problem. So why this time would it come back? I don't get it.
Yeah, nor I. Oh, see, okay. Marty is piling on now. He said, by the way, that comparison insults the cockroaches.
Oh, and you're trying to flood yours out.
Oh, shut up.
Have you accessed the main, is there a main shut off there?
Oh, yeah, and it's shut off now.
So,
and it was shut off before.
Yeah.
But what we didn't know was when we turned it back on, that we'd, right. I mean,
yeah.
I'll be honest, it did not occur to me, it has never occurred to me, to go through and check all the plumbing before, but it was winter, it did get cold, but it shouldn't have frozen.
No. Was it PVC pipe?
Yeah.
So plastic, right? Or PVC.
Yeah, PVC.
Metal. It wasn't a metal pipe.
No, I'd be in a real world of hurt the idea of trying to sweat copper, and you know, you can't solder copper if there's any water anywhere near it.
Nope.
So, yeah, at least all I've got to do is fool with PVC, but Jesus, the job.
Oh, yeah. Well, I wish the best.
Yeah, Calgon, take me away.
Well, at least it is PVC, so, you know, like you said, you don't have to do all that sweating of the copper and waiting for everything to dry out, and, you know, to get that done.
Oh, by the way, John Fox just checked in with me and told me that the PayPal widget does work over at the website.
Well, it worked before. It's just with my accessible equipment. Before, it didn't work. You know, it baffles me as to why it got sent back, though, but I'll resend it. So,
well, bless your heart. We do appreciate it. And, you know, the whole Horn family has... hauled us out of the fire, and we've got a fighting chance.
Well, I live for the day that I'll be able to make one of those challenges. Keep hoping I'll win the lottery or something, and I probably will about a week before I die. You know, my aunt gave up playing them.
Now that, by God, is the definition of optimism, Kevin.
Yeah, I know it, but hey, at least I'll have won it. You know. So, but seriously, you know, this is something, your show is something that's important to me because of the conversational radio aspect, but also because of the informational aspect. And I would not have known about mountaintop removal at all were it not for your show. So, you know, I would have been one of those people that was totally ignorant of it even now if I had not known of your show. So, you know, when you can get that kind of information from a show, and I venture to say you're the only talk show in West Virginia that's talking about it as well.
From a liberal or progressive standpoint, there's one other, and his name is Bobby Nelson, and he's a really, really good guy down in Huntington.
Oh, okay. I didn't know they had any of the liberal talk shows.
There is actually a little bitty progressive radio station in Huntington, West Virginia.
Good.
But I can't get on there because, well, we say naughty words.
Yeah, just have to have the little button that...
That little button, Kevin, that's a little $4,000 button.
Well, in that case, you just have to make sure you don't say the naughty words.
Now, you don't get anywhere near terrestrial radio without one of those things, because the first violation is $475,000.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's six.
Remember, they upped the fine amount after the nipple of doom back in the Super Bowl a few years ago.
Yeah, that's another thing I liked about Europe when I was over there. They're much more liberal on their commercials, as I'm sure you've seen.
Oh, yeah. Most of the rest of the world is. You know, we and Iran and Saudi Arabia, we've got a problem.
Yeah. Yeah, but we look at Iran and Saudi Arabia both and think of them as Stone Age people, you know, not only because we bombed Iran bombed Iraq back to the Stone Age, but because we feel like they're so unintelligent compared to us. But when we look,
well, remember when that phrase was, remember when bombed back to the Stone Age was used with regard to Afghanistan, and some right-wing smartass of the Bush administration said, well, they can't do that. They're already there. And Donald Rumsfeld was running around complaining that there was nothing left that was any fun to bomb in Afghanistan. Nothing but a bunch of mud huts.
Yep. Don't remind me. I consider that whole eight-year period of the Bush regime to be definitely... I used to think Nixon was the worst presidency in my personal history of now 53 years, but right now I have to say the Bush presidency was the worst by far. Nixon at least had some intelligence.
Oh, hell, Nixon was a liberal.
Yeah, compared to Bush.
We got the EPA out of Nixon. Nixon was the last president to actually talk about something called a minimum living wage.
Yep. And if you remember, one of the things I've always had a fondness for him for, do you remember he instituted price freezes on things during that whole recession period?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. And if it hadn't been for the fact that he was just batshit insane and paranoid and delusional, walking around talking to the paintings and leaning over conspiratorially to Kissinger and saying things, Henry, they just didn't understand me. Yeah. Or sitting around talking to Billy Graham, Billy, it's the Jews. The Jews control Hollywood and they're destroying America, Billy. Oh, I agree, Mr. President. But see, in a more general, universal sense, Kevin, that's a warning. That's a warning to us about not thinking, anytime you catch yourself thinking, can't get any worse.
Yep.
The Republican Party will always find a way to prove you wrong. Just when you thought that you got all the way down into the basement, you know, where the creepy shit happens in the horror movies,
yep.
All of a sudden you'll hear, you know, and the next trap door will open.
Yep.
And it's the abattoir is all the way down.
Well, I'm certain in the next 100 years we will have another presidency that's just as bad, but I certainly hope not.
Somewhere out there, tonight, there's a Republican who has the power, and it's kind of like one of those dark side of the force powers, Kevin. The power to make George W. Bush look like Marcus Aurelius. In fact, everybody knows now, I love reading Charlie Pierce's blog over at Esquire. I love his nickname for George W. Bush. C plus Augustus. It's just magnificent. But no, that Republican is out there. I mentioned that I think it's Finnish, that film Iron Sky the other night that I found so delightful, that is all predicated upon the reelection efforts of President Sarah Palin, who was elected president in 2016.
God forbid.
Yeah, that'll...
Perish the thought, whatever, don't salt over your left shoulder, something. You know, whatever.
But it doesn't have to be her. There are rumblings in Minnesota that Michelle Bachmann
may challenge Al Franken for his Senate seat. Yeah, let that one rattle for a little bit.
Well, somewhere she's been elected because of the congressional district she's in, plus the gerrymandering. So I don't think she could. She might win the primary, but I don't think she could beat Franken.
I mean, the Senate seat that's being vacated by Tom Harkin of Iowa.
Yep.
The leading contender for that seat in the Senate, that august body, the world's most exclusive country club, the leading contender in Iowa for that Senate seat being vacated by the decent progressive Tom Harkin is Steve King.
Scaring.
Steve King, who compares immigrants to dog breeding. Steve King, who said that America would be better if the homosexuals would just stop acting so gay. That's Steve King.
Well, I expect Steve Stockman to run for president in 2016.
Oh, Jesus.
You know, it's just, I hope they prevent him from coming tomorrow night. I really do.
No, they're going to let him in. They're going to let him in.
Well, I certainly hope this time, if someone shouts out something like, "You lie," the House police, whatever they're called, will quietly walk over and remove the person that does it, because, you know, if that was a liberal doing that, you wouldn't only be removed, you'd be beaten and removed.
The sounds of pearls being clutched would be like castanets across the country.
Exactly.
Kevin, it's awful good to talk to you. It's been too long. You take care, and I hope we'll talk again soon, all right?
All right, Bob. Thanks for sharing, talking, and I do appreciate it.
It's always a joy.
And keep doing what you're doing.
Trying.
Okay.
Thanks. Oh, and that's another thing. I've been mercifully relieved, like starting on Thursday in D.C., somewhere along the way, Tuesday or Wednesday, I shook the wrong hand and got some sort of ungodly head cold, most of which is gone by now. And I say mercifully, because you didn't want to hear that. Well, I'm Bob Kincaid. Welcome to the radio show. It was not nice. It is Moran Monday, and we do have lines open if you want to get in the conversation. 304-658-3333. If you have a specific Moran nominee for this Moran Monday, don't hide your light under a bushel, but pick up the phone and let your light so shine that it will shine upon your Moran, and we can know Moranity for what it is. But no, we've got Morans. Oh Jesus, we've got Morans. It's not very often that we have Moran Monday nominations or nominees coming from Oregon. But by God, we got them today. And I'm not sure who the actual nominees should be. Because on the one hand, a few hundred, as the story is being reported, a few hundred gun goobers demonstrated and rallied outside the Oregon State Capitol this past Friday. Okay, I'm all right with that. The right to peacefully assemble and petition for redress of grievances? Sure. First Amendment guy, that's me. They brought their guns, you know, to show how peaceful they'd be with their shooting arms. Not kidding. And here's part B of this particular Moran Monday nomination. Oregon state law allows people who have concealed carry permits to openly carry deadly firearms inside public buildings. Thus, the gun goobs who were protesting and demonstrating at the State House in Oregon carried their guns into the state house. Now, compare this with Wisconsin, where the Republicans have rigged things such in such a way as to not allow a camera, a book, a notepad and pen, none of that into the into the chambers of the assembly or the it may be the state senate as well. Huh. So, like I said, it's a double-bitted Moran nomination, this story out of Oregon. One, the insecure, culturally terrified freaks who felt like they had to take their shooting guns with them to go and peacefully demonstrate in support of their rights that aren't being abridged by anybody anywhere. Or the Oregon legislature that somewhere along the way wrote a bill that allows people who have concealed carry permits not to conceal their weapons, but to carry them openly in the corridors of the state capitol. This is going to work out so well. Why do they have that law in Oregon? Ask our friends at the National Republican Rifle Association. It's about 8:30. Got about, I'd say, 25 minutes of good conversation left in the program if you want to get involved. 304-658-3333. See who we got. Hey, welcome to the program.
Bob, big time.
Hey, Andy.
How you doing?
Man, I'm wore out, stressed out, but I'm here.
You had a little problems with your pipes, huh? A little cold there?
Yeah, a little cold, a little wet, a little couple of inches of water flowing around the computers. You know, that uninterruptible power supply is making me a little nervous.
How much snow did you get?
Oh, no snow. I mean, there was snow. Well, we weren't here for it. It got down to blue-ass cold.
Wow.
But, hell, it was 60 degrees here today.
Oh, wow. I know over the weekend my mom got quite a bit of snow.
Well, she was probably on the south side of the storm that hit the Northeast, right?
She's in northern New Jersey.
Yeah.
So they got quite a bit of snow. I know my brother actually is one of those guys that runs the trucks.
Oh man,
he was running all night.
Yeah, that's the. Governor saying, well, you know, these snowplow drivers, they live to plow snow, so this is their time.
Now, overtime.
Oh yeah.
Cha-ching, you know, just rack up the dollars, but God, I wouldn't want to do it. God, that's an enormous amount of pressure. You know, you got to be on the ball the whole time.
Oh yeah, and I mean, frankly, it's a terrifying, terrifying thing.
Wouldn't want to run somebody over with one of those things.
No, and I wouldn't want to. I've seen like the footage of the guys who plow in the California mountain passes where, you know, you get the 2 and 3 footers from out of nowhere. Ugh, pass.
I remember I used to live in Colorado in some of those mountain passes. Guys, the snow would be way over the truck. I mean, you're talking 12-foot drifts or 15-foot drifts you have to go through. Oh, man, that's real work, moving that kind of snow.
Yeah, no kidding.
You know, I don't know if you noticed, but in the Czech Republic, they had their first elections. I think it was on Saturday the 26th. Nice that they do it on the weekends, too. Most civilized countries that actually want people to vote. But it was kind of is interesting. I don't know if there's a guy named Miloš Zeman was the guy who won. He was a social democrat. So he was the more left-wing candidate. He was going against a guy named Karl Schwarzenberg, which is more the right-wing aristocrat.
Mm-hmm.
And Zeman won by about 55% to 45%. But the interesting thing about that race is, you know, in our country, the rural areas are usually the much more reactionary conservative, right?
Right.
In the Czech Republic, the rural areas almost exclusively go for the Social Democrats. That's where the communists actually are the farmers and the rural people, the people with less income, go for the have more of the communist leanings. And it's the people in the city, actually, and the younger people that vote to the right. You know, completely the urban areas go for the right-winger, and the rural areas go for the lefty. Just kind of interesting.
That is interesting.
And we don't have that here.
But, you know, I was talking about that story out of Ceylon about the people in the El Condor region there, that indigenous tribe. And one of the things that was pointed out in this article was the fact that the guy who's running Ecuador right now was elected as a leftist. And so we have to be very careful, because I'm beginning to think that none of the labels really matter anymore, because he's behaving like a classical, typical neoliberal, and he's sold out an entire chunk of his country and the people who live on it to the Chinese, who want to come and do environmentally responsible gold mining.
Yeah, see how long that lasts.
And the indigenous people are saying, you know, they'll have to kill us to get everyone. They'll have to kill every one of us to get the gold. That's the name of the story.
Wow. Well, it's just like the Canadian indigenous people.
Well, and there's a Canadian outfit that wants to mine the gold.
Well, you know, the Canadian country as a whole, by the Financial Times, is voted the most business-friendly place on the planet. Is actually Canada. That's where people voted in the Financial Times. The best place to do business is Canada, so as far as neoliberal policies go. You know, that regime that's in control now is getting the job done for the business folks. I'm surprised they can't get that pipeline to go to the Pacific. You know, the XL pipeline.
Yeah, but apparently there's a significant pushback to that idea.
Yeah, which is a good thing.
And I don't know, maybe they can't hear it through the Yukon. Or
I think it's because of the indigenous uprising. I thought the people there don't want it, and it might be too difficult.
Yeah, I mean, the Idle No More movement is huge, and of course it is getting underreported, but it is a monumental movement. You've got native peoples out there declaring that treaties have been broken and abrogated.
Mm-hmm.
And in the 21st century, that has real meaning. On the other hand, and I was deeply disturbed by this, I read the story last week while I was still in D.C., about the Crow people in Montana who just voted to open up their tribal lands to the tune of millions of acres or something. If I'm getting the numbers right, for strip mining, for coal.
Oh, gee.
And it, you know, that's, yeah, right, that's the same thing. Ah, damn it. Yeah, it's a kick the furniture moment. Because when I compare the determined resistance of the Ojibwe people that I've been blessed to interact with in Wisconsin, to that kind of conduct, oh, come on, please. You know, this is, you know, if white folks come to you and say, we're going to bring prosperity by blowing up your land, that's, you know, that's smallpox blankets of a different variety. It's still death, it's still poisonous, and it's still going to be absolutely destructive. Jesus.
Yeah, you should get a chance this weekend to bring up your H.R. 526.
Oh, great.
Speak Act at a town hall meeting coming up. And I'll definitely let that know. And I was looking at the press release you put out. So you got five congresspeople from California. You had 10 last time with H.R. 5959. So I hope you get more to come online.
I think we will. I think we will. I mean, we were really, like I said, just absolutely tickled, Andy, to come out of the blocks with two original sponsors and 24 co-sponsors. That was a pretty huge launch for this.
So that's what you got 24, huh? I was going to count that, and I didn't get a chance yet to count the.
And as soon as we get back and do some more work, there will be more.
Right. Well, it's nice to see you got Gerard Huffman.
Yeah.
In the Marin County area, who's a new guy. I wasn't sure how good he would be, even though I guess his past, he's been an environmental lawyer. So that's good that he jumped right out of the blocks and supported that because he took Lynn Woolsey's seat.
Right.
That's nice to see.
And then, of course, we lost Filner because became what, mayor of San Diego or something?
Yeah. That's what I heard. I guess he was in the Central Coast.
And then Kucinich and Hinchey are out of the Congress, so you know that's three. But it's really great because we're starting out where we were after the work that we did in the short little remainder of the Congress as it was. We don't have all the same co-sponsors, so we need to bring some of the other ones back on board, and then lo and behold, we'll have around 30. And 30 is a huge number for a pushback against the industry, and a matter of standing up for people's human rights.
You know, it's just nice to be out there, period, and keep the bill going. I mean, no question about it. I didn't tell you, but the last time I actually got in front of one of the staffers, actually it wasn't the last time, but a time before, I got in front of one of the staffers and was trying to talk up.
Sanity for a change. The Rick Smith Show.
Check out the website at thericksmithshow.com. If you've missed any portion of the program, you can download the podcast there at the website or get the Stitcher app and take the program on the go. Question, comment, something on your mind, you can email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com, or you can give us a call, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Another pain quote that sticks in my head, I prefer peace. But if trouble must come, let it be in my time so that my children can live in peace. And I think about that on a lot of issues. Whether it's on the job or it's in the environment or whether it's in government or in war. Let it be now because I want a better tomorrow for my children. I want to make sure that they have opportunity. I want to make sure that they have peace. I want to make sure that they have health care. They have retirement security. They have all the things that I want, and I think we all want. But let's make their lives easier. And, I'm mentally right there with that sentiment. And I think we all are. If we're going to have to tighten our belts, let's do it now. Let's make sure we get things done. If we have to invest and we have to create things, let's do it now. Let's get it done today. Pretty simple stuff. I look at this story up in Canada, and we interviewed somebody from the Canadian auto workers not too long ago. They want a 55% pay cut, the folks at Caterpillar. They've told their unionized workers, well, you know what? You're going to get a 55% pay cut. Or we're going to move to the U.S. You got to love that. Maybe looking to China, for instance, or who knows where. Now, understand this is a very, very profitable company. Revenues for 2011 increased 4% to $2.65 billion. They're sitting on a boatload of cash. And they're saying, you know what, you working people? Sorry. We want more money. Those workers in the U.S., well, they make less than you do. So if you don't take this, we're going to kick you to the curb. This is what we're exporting, folks. This is the mentality that we're exporting here in the U.S. This business-friendly, opportunistic pay cutting. And I blame us. Because we're one of the few nations in the industrialized world who have such pathetic labor laws, We're one of the most disorganized workforces in the entire world, and we've bought into that right-wing line. I can make my own deal. And I've asked this question a bunch of times. You know, tell me what you do. Tell me what you do. Tell me when you walked into the boss on the day you got hired and said, you know what, boss, I'm going to make my own deal. Because most people that I've talked to, when they went and they got their job, the boss said, this is what I'm offering. Take it or leave it. These are the conditions. Take it or leave it. These are the benefit packages. Or maybe none. Take it or leave it. That's the negotiation. And that's the negotiation the Romneys of the world and the Nikki Haley's of the world and the Republican Party, the GOME, that's the kind of negotiation they want to have. They want to have a desperation class of folks like you and me. They want to have people who are in that poverty situation where, hey, I got kids to feed. I got to worry about their tomorrow. Oh, I can't risk losing this job, even though it's not paying me enough to pay my bills or support my family. But a company that's wildly profitable, and you look at all of these big companies, their returns are beautiful. The investor class is wonderful. They're just so happy. And they're paying 15% capital gains, minus whatever expenditures they have. You know, lunch on the yacht, got to write that off, of course. And then you and I pick up the tab. I don't know if you saw this story. Rand Paul was detained at an airport recently by the TSA. And, boy, it was a big stink. Evidently, they saw something in his leg region, you know, somewhere on the porno scanner. And, well, they wanted to detain him. He got upset. Whole nine yards, blah, 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 whatever happened. Long story short, they didn't let him go. He ended up missing his big speech. So Ron Paul, the opportunist, and you got to give him credit, good entrepreneur. Went online and, you know, set up $1,000 to help end the Transportation Security Administration. And the story I saw as of this morning, they came up with about $261,000 to go after the TSA. Now, look. This whole idea that we're going to end the TSA, I've heard this call quite often. And I'm going to stick with my original ideology. My original thought on this, very simple. We end, if you want to do away with the TSA, I've got the perfect plan. You're allowed to carry nothing on. No carry-ons, no laptops, no cell phones. Here's what you could carry anything on that you can put in your pockets while you're flying naked. I believe we should just all fly naked. Have you, like, at the doctor's office, they got the roll of paper, put that on the back of the seat, just roll the paper down over the seat, and sit your naked behind in the seat. So whatever you can put in your pockets, you can bring with you. Nothing else, though. That would solve our problem, I think, don't you? Don't you think? Wouldn't that be the solution? I mean, if we're going to be patting people down and porno scanning them and all that. Look, I'm as upset as anybody about the procedures. I'm not angry at the people doing it. They're following their orders. They're doing their job as described by us. We've told our government that we are so fearful. We're so fearful of those other people that we want to make sure that nobody gets on the plane with, you know, any liquid more than 3 ounces. So a can of soda, just too dangerous. You might be able to, take the varnish off the armrest. Yeah, I go back to 9/11. And, you know, I grew up in the 70s when you would turn on the evening news and somebody was hijacking a plane to somewhere. And I remember as a kid going, explain to me how it is that they hijack these planes all the time. How is it that someone got into the cockpit? How is that possible? Lock the door. And there was a call during the 70s. One, to harden the cockpit door so that nobody could kick in the door. And I always wonder, why don't you just make the cockpit separate from the common area? Have an actual wall that you can't get through. You know, put a little bathroom in the little downstairs of the cockpit. You know, have it up and down a little bit. Nothing luxurious, but where you can go. Seems simple to me. This way you don't have the problem of someone coming in with a box cutter saying, I'm going to slit your throat with this box cutter if you don't fly the plane. And I look at this and I go, you know, there's the answer. Oh, someone's going to blow up the plane. Well, stop letting people carry things on. So they want to end it. They want to get rid of the TSA. The idea is, oh, we're going to get rid of the whole Transportation Safety Administration. It's all gone. What do you think is going to take its place? Do you just think that if we end the TSA that we're just going to be able to walk onto the plane? Do you think that the airlines are going to put themselves in a position that they can be sued down the road because they didn't keep you safe? Because we're a litigious society. So what you'll see is you'll see privatized TSA. You'll see private companies doing screening. And you will see it go one of two very distinctly different ways. One with very, very lax policies that makes everyone very happy. Oh, no one, you know, I walked right through and I got my four ounce hair shampoo through. And, you know, somebody will come and, you know, and eventually we will have another 9/11 type event, possibly. Or you will see them crack down like never before because, oh, by the way, a private company, good luck going after them because they don't have to let you on the plane. You don't want to go through our pat down? You don't get on the plane. It's private. And this is what a lot of folks don't seem to get. And understand, the airlines understand this. They probably want it because it's a lot of money that they can make off of because, you know, somebody's going to have to pay them. And of course they'll go after the airports for it. Somebody's going to pay. It's going to be you. It's going to be me. We're going to pay for it. Only we won't be able to complain about it. Because when it's private, well, it's private. You don't have to get on the plane. And that's been my position from the beginning. I think it's pretty simple. The easy answer, just fly naked. Very, very, very simple. We don't have any bickering, any complaining, any carrying on. You know what it is. And you know what? We may actually look at each other again. Who knows? And maybe the waitresses or the stewardesses and the stewards will have an easier time of it. And the people who make the paper that go down on the seats, maybe they'll be happy too. It's a win-win-win all the way around. So we don't have to be angry at each other all the time. And I'm being facetious. But you look at this. I mean, the last time I flew, it was take your shoes off, take your belt off, take this off. We went to Liberty Island. I took my daughter to see the Statue of Liberty. I got on the boat. Before I got on the boat, I had to do the whole strip thing. Take your belt off, take your shoes off, take this off, take that off, go through the metal detector. Oh, by the way, there's something we picked up. Oh, hey, oh, this, la, la. We get on the boat. We travel over to Liberty Island from Freedom Park, of course. And I get off the boat. And there are guys with M16s and SWAT uniforms standing on Freedom Island. And then I've immediately got to go through another series of take off your shoes, take off your belt, take off all your metal, put it in this little tin can again. Because we're so paranoid, so afraid. That's what they've done to us. Yeah, I remember when they were debating the Patriot Act. And a woman stood up and said, I don't care. Give me a national ID card. I don't care. I just want to be safe. What we will give up for the illusion of security. Anyway, if you missed any portion of the program, thericksmithshow.com is the best place to get it. And, of course, if you missed anything and you've got a smartphone, get the Stitcher app. And you can take the program on the go. Quick break, right back after this. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk. We want the world and we want it now. We're going to take it anyhow. We want the airwaves.
Not right wing, just right. The Rick Smith Show.
You're listening to the best of The Rick Smith Show. Hey there, there, fellow working class heroes, I have some great news. You can now get the Rick Smith Show podcast on your iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, or Palm on demand and on the go. Get your class war to go by downloading the Stitcher app on your smartphone by going to Stitcher.com and search for The Rick Smith Show, or go to our website at TheRickSmithShow.com and click on our Stitcher button. Together we can and we will rebuild a prosperous working class and leave opportunity for our children. You're listening to the best of The Rick Smith Show.
Not right wing, just right. The Rick Smith Show. What they do.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Check out the website, TheRickSmithShow.com. Questions, comments, something on your mind, you can email me, Rick@TheRickSmithShow.com. Now to find out what's going on in Washington, D.C., our good friend Victoria Jones. Talk Radio News Service. Victoria, thanks for taking time for me.
Thank you.
So what's going on the trail?
Excuse me. Well, often Newt Gingrich is rather surprisingly disappointing performance last night. He now says today that, in fact, he was shocked by what he describes as Mitt Romney's totally dishonest replies to a lot of questions. I think it's the most blatantly dishonest performance by a presidential candidate I've ever seen. And when he describes all the moments during the debate when he sort of looked down at his feet and things like that, he says he was so stunned by some of Romney's statements. He says he didn't engage Romney at the time because I wanted to fact check. I wanted to make sure he was as totally dishonest as I thought he was.
So the answers were on his shoes? Is that what he's saying?
Yes, that's right.
To me, he just looked really tired, really worn out. All the moon talk must have just taken it out of him.
I thought he looked tired. That's exactly what I thought. I thought he looked very, very tired, like the speech he'd given earlier in the day had just worn him out. And, he should have saved it for game time.
Yep, should have been on his game face. I got to be honest, though, since we found that money offshore and Romney brought it back, hiring the new debate coach was a brilliant idea because I thought Romney looked fantastic.
He did. And this is Michelle Bachmann's debate coach.
Oh, she could be vice president. Wouldn't that be great? The Michelle Bachmann vice president. I might be able to get my picture taken with crazy after all.
I think it would be fantastic. Of course, it's going to be Marco Rubio, yes, but it would be fantastic if it was Michelle Bachmann.
So, you know, in looking at Gingrich, I mean, just a couple of days ago, the sky was the limit for him. Now 9% down in the polls. Bob Dole has come out against him.
Yes.
The campaign seems to be – Rick Santorum's come back to Pennsylvania. It kind of looks like we might be heading towards the end.
Well, it looks like that, but, you know, this guy's been counted out more times than I can't think of an analogy. So he could come back again, but, look, it looks like he's going to lose Florida. He is down 9 points, and that's not good. And if he does lose Florida with all those delegates, it really is hard to see how he comes back from this one. And it's all very well for him to come out the day after the debate and say, oh, well, you know, I'm so stunned, it was so dreadful. He needed to do it that night.
Yep.
It's too late.
Yeah, I mean, he needed to hit a home run last night. It wasn't there.
He didn't hit a home run. He hit a lousy run. He didn't hit.
Little dribbler back to the pitcher. The guy who I thought was just, at some point, please, can we just do away with Ron Paul by now? Look, I mean, I get the court jester thing. I get the class clown thing. To me, he's that kid in the class that you just want to smack.
Yeah, I mean, he made some, you know, interesting points, and he was quite funny on a couple of occasions.
If you're an alien, yeah, they were interesting. Maybe we could send him to the moon with the politicians. I mean, that was the best line of the night for him.
That was the best line of the night.
And he should have gone with him. Good. Bye. You too.
Yeah. Now, he did make an interesting point when he was saying about his health records that it's only one page. I'm thinking, really? What doctor do you have?
Himself.
Himself, exactly. And then he said, well, we do have age discrimination laws in this country. And I thought to myself, not if you had your way.
Yeah. Were you surprised at the response that the woman who was unemployed got from the three, from the four of them? I mean, because they didn't, none of them answered her question.
No.
All of them just said, well, you could buy something. And I'm like, she doesn't have a job.
I tweeted like mad. I mean, I was so insane in my tweets. The Twitter nearly exploded. I kept saying that. She doesn't have a job. She can't buy any of these things. It was just awful what they did to that woman. It was dreadful. They had no solution for her at all.
Yeah, I mean, I think Ron Paul's was the best, though. You know, it's the government. The government's fault.
Yeah, the government's fault. Yeah, nothing to do with the health insurance companies. And there was nobody out on the streets before Medicare and Medicaid in the 60s. Nobody was on the streets.
Wow. Just it was fun to watch while I watched it. It was fun watching Santorum go after Romney over Romney Care. I'm going to kind of miss, I know there's not another debate for what, almost another month, February
22nd. It's a long, long time.
No, I'm going to have to go to rehab now. You know, I'm going to be jonesing for debates.
I know.
Because, I mean, this is just, I don't think it helps our political process at all. I don't think it's good for them. I think they're just beating each other, but it is fun to watch.
It was fun to watch. And, you know, the audience doesn't help the process at all. It doesn't add anything to the process. It turns it into a spectator sport.
Yep.
It doesn't do anything for democracy.
We are moving ever so much closer to American Idol-type elections.
Completely. At least the presidential debates, what audience there is has to stay silent.
Oh, but if Newt's the candidate, he said he won't participate. They have to be able to applaud because nothing says freedom like
applaud. Let him not participate. Let him not participate. Let him not have those Lincoln-Douglas debates. Let him go without.
But it's fun to watch and good for them. My last one on the debate before we move along. Was I the only one who caught up when Newt was asked about the wives? That he only said the three of them would be good. Which one was the fourth? And is Calista not his wife? Is that kind of the, am I getting something, some vibe
what
there?
What he was trying to say was that the three wives other than Calista would all make great first ladies, but that Calista would be the best. But the entire press room, by the way, collapsed in laughter because of the way he said it. When he said the three wives would all be great, because of course it sounded like he was talking about his three wives.
Yeah, well, there's that too. But I thought the other three was when he was talking. Maybe he had an eye for them. You know, he was talking about the moon. He was talking about the moon. He was talking about Venus. Maybe he had her Uranus on it. Who knows? I don't know.
Well, you know, I'm not even going there, but you know that as part of the bill that he introduced for statehood and everything else like that for the moon, part of his plan was for a Mars colony and to go to Venus.
Nice. Yep. Beautiful. Never mind. I've got to be good. I'm not going to get myself into trouble. Let's move on. What's the president doing today? I guess he gave a big education speech.
He did at the University of Michigan, gave an education speech very briefly. Basically, he explained how his new college affordability proposal would shift federal funding away from colleges and universities that fail to keep tuition costs from rising. The idea is that if colleges fail to keep net tuition down, and they would shuffle them towards those that keep tuition affordable, provide good value, and serve a relatively high number of low-income students. There's a whole load of working parts to it, but the idea is they feel it's time to do that and to also address student debt.
Yeah, it would be nice if the federal government funded education like we did in the past, and state government would do it as well. And in Michigan, it's interesting he did the speech there. In Michigan, the Democrats, who this bill doesn't stand a snowball's chance of passing, part of their education initiative is anyone who lives in Michigan, goes through Michigan schools from kindergarten through high school, if they get into any state university or state community college or anything there, fully paid for.
Wow.
And I think that across the country, Democrats should be introducing that kind of working class friendly legislation, because that's how you get into the Romney world. That's how you move up into the middle class and beyond, by having a good education and not being saddled with hundreds of thousands of dollars of debt until the day you die. So good. I'm glad to hear it. Fourth quarter numbers in. What's going on?
Fourth quarter numbers were good. GDP is 2.8%, not quite the 3% everybody would like to see, because that really makes a crack into the unemployment numbers, but it was good. Of course, those on the right are saying, oh, well, the entire year was 1.7%, so it was bad. Well, yeah, the entire year was 1.7%, but the fourth quarter was 2.8%, and it was a big increase. And the people who are watching it are saying this is an indicator, along with the drop from 8.7% to 8.5% unemployment last month, several other indicators they've seen, that they seem to think that the economy is slowly improving.
Yeah, and I saw something just a bit ago that the guy who was McCain's chief economic advisor, this Doug Eakins, I guess his
Douglas,
name
was, what's it?
Holtz Eakin or something?
Yes, Holtz Eakin, yes.
Who was against the stimulus package has come out and said, you know, the president, you got to give him credit for it because we're trending in that direction. He actually thinks next year we're going to see between 3 and 3.5% growth, and then, you know, picking up after that because of the Recovery Act. And like I said from the beginning, had we a larger Recovery Act, chunkier, much bigger shock, I think we'd be further along. And had we not a recalcitrant Republican Party, I think we would have been further along. Just my thoughts.
Well, you know.
Just my thoughts, but it's interesting that this guy came out and said, you know what?
It's
the stimulus.
It's very interesting. Very interesting indeed.
And finally, Biden at the House Democrats retreat.
Yes, as you know, the Republicans had their retreat last year. Democrats had their retreat this year. Well, Biden went to rally the troops, and he did. He got a standing ovation.
Yay!
And he basically said that come January the 20th, he and Barack would be, and he called him that too, would be standing there.
Very good, 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 good. You know, hey, you got to do that every once in a while. Sometimes you got to give a shot into the arm to the troops and get them out there working. So good for them. Good, good. All righty. Victoria, always great. With you. I hope you have a great weekend. And yeah, thanks for the door. For who knows? Sent me this link with 10 doors you don't want to go through and forgot the Blues Brothers
link. Exactly. But yeah, the Blues Brothers link was great. So glad you sent me that.
Yeah, just that's my scare. That's the scariest thing in the world for me, going to see the Nun with the Stick. Victoria, thanks so much.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Have a great weekend. Let's take a quick break. Right back. We'll wrap things up. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
10% of people own 90% of the world. Where do you fit in? Take a look at yourself. 10% of the people own 90% of the world.
We're smart policy. And sound investment matters. The Rick Smith Show.
You're listening to the best of The Rick Smith Show. Hey there, fellow working class heroes. I have some great news. You can now get The Rick Smith Show podcast on your iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, or Palm on demand and on the go. Get your class war to go by downloading the Stitcher app on your smartphone by going to Stitcher.com and search for The Rick Smith Show, or go to our website at TheRickSmithShow.com and click on our Stitcher button. Together we can and we will rebuild a prosperous working class and leave opportunity for our children. You're listening to the best of The Rick Smith Show.
Buy the stuff you love with retailers' credit cards. Ditch their high interest rates with the help of PSECU. Move those balances to the PSECU Visa with no transfer fee and a low 2.9 annual percentage rate. Good through December 31st, 2014. PSECU. Financing life is what we do best. Talk with us. Call 800-LOAN-555 or visit PSECU.com/visa for complete program details. Whatever new stuff you bought last year with retailers' high-interest credit cards, let PSECU help you get a fresh new start. Move those balances to the PSECU Visa with no transfer fee and a low 2.9 annual percentage rate. Good through December 31st, 2014. PSECU. Financing life is what we do best. Talk with us. Call 800-LOAN-555 or visit PSECU.com/visa for complete program details. This credit union is federally insured by the National Credit Union Administration, Equal Opportunity Lender.
Hey there, fellow working class heroes. I have some great news. You can now get the Rick Smith Show podcast on your iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, or Palm on demand and on the go. Get your class war to go by downloading the Stitcher app on your smartphone by going to Stitcher.com and search for The Rick Smith Show, or go to our website at TheRickSmithShow.com and click on our Stitcher button. Together we can and we will rebuild a prosperous working class and leave opportunity for our children.
It's fuzzy math. Fuzzy math. I'm practicing fuzzy math. So long as we need to fudge the numbers and not tell the truth. For diplomacy to be effective, lies must be credible.
Yeah, fuzzy math.
Is deliberate deception.
Deliberate deception.
Same thing happened in 2000.
George Bush lost.
I know that. So let me just tell you what the facts are.
I love this song. See what his plan's in place? No taxes. The wealthy people of the country, the Romneys of the world. You know, just wealth, prosperity for the 1%. Gotta give corporations the people's money. Man, I just love that song because it's true. I mean, you know, whoever pieced it together did a remarkable job because it stands the test of time. It does. It just stands the test of time. Anyway, welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Check out the website, TheRickSmithShow.com. If you missed any portion of our program, of course, our podcast is there at the website, and you can download that for free. And if you got a smartphone, get the Stitcher app, and you can take the program on the go. You know, times are tough in the economy, and we give our podcast out for free so you can enjoy that wherever you go. Now, you know, the economy's tough, and there's a reason it's tough. We have given away boatloads and boatloads and boatloads of money, mostly to the top 1%. And, you know, I got a list of who ran up what, where, and why. If you remember, when Clinton left office, the national debt was about $5.7 trillion. Now, when Bush left office, it was about, and understand, when Clinton left office, it was $5.7 trillion and trending downward. We were paying back the budget was balanced. We were actually paying back some of the debt. They stopped using a good portion of the Social Security money. They were actually going in the right direction. The ship was righted. Why? Because we raised taxes just a little bit. Had we done it a little bit more, I think the ship would have been righted a lot sooner, but that's a whole other discussion. So when Clinton leaves office, $5.7 trillion and trending downward. So there's Greenspan, if you remember, at the time going, you know, in the very near future, we're going to be completely debt-free. There'll be no national debt, and I don't know what that world looks like. In his mind, you know, without a debt, without owing money, what do you do? Well, of course, you would borrow some more because a lot of the debt is, you know, us with treasury bonds because we floated bonds to build roads and bridges and stuff like that. So when Bush leaves office, remember he gave away a whole bunch of money, started a couple of wars, prescription drug bill, a whole bunch of really bad decisions. He leaves Obama with nearly a $12 trillion debt and skyrocketing upward. No matter who was president in 2009, it could have been Bush again, could have been McCain, could have been Caribou Barbie, could have been any of them. There was going to be a deficit of $1.4 trillion. So at the end of 2009, no matter what you're talking about, you're looking at about $13.3 trillion in debt, no matter who's president. So when you look at the numbers now and you look at it through that lens, you realize that we haven't spent all that much money. We've spent a lot, but not as much as the Republicans and the righties are trying to convince us. We're $16 trillion in debt, and Obama did it in 3 years. Nonsense. And we know that. But what our media keeps telling us is that, oh, we just blew that money. Understand, our problems are much deeper than just our debt problem. We have followed a conservative economic ideology taught in these schools, mostly the Chicago school mentality, that low tax rates, no regulation, no worker rights, no environmental regulations. That's the way you grow an economy. You push the folks on the bottom down further. In fact, you just mash them into the ground so that the folks at the top, they do well. Because the folks at the top, those are the ones who are funding these schools. So when you see the Koch brothers give $2 million to Florida State University so that they can have veto power over any economics professor hired at that university, you now know why. Because they want to have a say on how the future economists and future business leaders view the economy. When Clinton left office, there were 17 million manufacturing jobs. We lost 6 million manufacturing jobs during the Bush years. 6 million manufacturing jobs. Those jobs tended to be very good paying jobs. One that a high school graduate with some training could get, support a family, buy a house, save for retirement, take a vacation, send their kids to school, whatever. A little disposable income to take the spouse to the movies or to dinner or whatever to help the rest of the economy. We lost that. We lost that because of insane trade deals. We lost that because of insane taxation problems. And so finally Obama's saying, well, we should probably stop this now. About 3 years too late. Should have done that right from the beginning. You move a company out of this country somewhere else, I don't want to pay for it. You know, it's like my wife telling me, oh, I'm leaving you. And by the way, here's the bill for the moving company. Not happening. But we're the dumb ones in this. And I blame us for this. Because we're the ones who've allowed it to happen. We voted for these people. We put these folks, we put the Bush in a second time. I can almost forgive the nation for him being president the first time. It was a Supreme Court thing. I get that. He lost the vote. Everyone knows that. In fact, what's really kind of odd, and I was just having this conversation the other day, the only scenario in which, and I guess this is how you can justify him being president, and so for all my friends who, you know, say, well, he stole the presidency, I can justify him being president. Because the only scenario in which he won, there is one, is the one that Al Gore asked for. So if he just gave Al Gore what he wanted, Bush would have won. So you could take some solace in that, that the Gore campaign didn't think that one through. But there's the thought. Anyway, got an email during the break. Andy sent me an email saying, Rick, I think John Nichols from The Nation said it best. He said, paraphrasing, the Republican debate is like watching a car crash event. You can pick a favorite, but you're there to watch them crash. And it's true. I mean, you're really there. It's a train wreck, and you know it's going to be a train wreck. But here's my problem with the train wreck. It's fun to watch these guys go after each other and tear each other apart. Each one of them is bad for this country. They're, like Obama said, they're wrong for the country. Their ideology is what got us into this mess. Their view of how we run an economy, their view of how we run a society, their view of how we run our government, what's got us here? And, you know, I recently used the analogy of, you know, I look at those four. You know, if I were a CEO of a company and I'm going to hire my executives and they come to me and say, oh, by the way, I'd like to be paid in a competitor's stock. That's how I view them. I view them as guys going to work for Pepsi wanting to be paid in Coke stock. Because I don't think they believe in our government. And I'll tell you that. They don't believe in it. So why would we have any of them here? They're telling you, we're going to destroy it. We're going to tear it down. And then what's going to happen? Well, you listen to the Paul bots, they're going to tell you you're going to have freedom and liberty and all those nice things that we like to think about without really understanding what the world will then look like. The world will look like the Romneys of the world buying up companies and buying up property and controlling things from above. And the rest of us, with no safety net under our feet, will see our standard of living drop precipitously. We will be falling. So when I see Joe Biden at the Democratic retreat saying, we're going to take back the House, you know, nice rhetoric, hopeful, I'm hoping, not likely from what I've been seeing. Where are the candidates? You got to run good campaigns. You got to invest in candidates. You've got to get people out in the street. You got to get people excited. It's nice rhetoric, but again, it's one of those things that just you got to work for. Anyway, if you missed any portion of the program, thericksmithshow.com. Today we had Isaiah Poole from the Campaign for America's Future. He was on talking about the State of the Union. And again, you know, he asked the question, why isn't anyone talking about poverty? Why are we seeing nobody using the P word? And the idea is, look, you know, we like to think of ourselves as a middle-class nation, and those are just poor, shiftless people who are too lazy to work. When the reality is, if you look at the numbers and you look at the trends, a lot of the people who are falling into poverty right now are people who used to be in that middle class, who, because corporate America has taken jobs overseas and because our trade policies have screwed us over, they're now falling. And the studies show it is a long, long climb back up to the middle class. And we talked with Chris Calabrese, organizer with the Communication Workers of America Local 1109. They ran an organizing drive out there in Brooklyn, New York. Cablevision now voted, and whoppingly, the workers at Cablevision said, we want representation. Now the hard part, the contract talks begin. So I wish them nothing but the best of luck. Also in the second hour, Joshua Holland, senior writer and editor at Alternet. He is also the host of a new program, Alternet Radio Hour, with Joshua Holland, going to be airing in the D.C. area on WEACT Radio. We're talking about Romney and his free enterprise. He probably wouldn't know free enterprise if it bit him in the behind. And Josh, you know, laid it out. Look, you know, most of the companies that he dealt with lost money. Where they made their money, where Bain Capital made money, were the service fees, were the you know, the oversight fees, were the money where they had stolen out of the company by over leveraging it and taking out the pension funds. Pretty simple. And in the third hour, Harvey Kay was here, with author of the book Thomas Paine and the Promise of America, talking about why the righties are wrong about Thomas Paine and how he would be a Wall Street guy. He would be an Occupy Wall Street guy. Last story real quick. The UN? The UN evidently the new way to get cocaine into the country. They found 35 pounds of cocaine in a diplomatic mail pouch there at the UN. So good for them. Anyway, have a great weekend. We look forward to being back here on Monday. Again, if you missed any portion of the program, thericksmithshow.com, best place to go to pick up our podcast. If you've got a smartphone, download the Stitcher app, take the program on the go, and of course, you can always email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. I always answer emails personally. It's the second last week of basketball season. Looking forward to the end. Have plenty of time. We'll see you back here on Monday. Have a great weekend.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Together, we can make America better. Email rick@thericksmithshow.com or interact with us anytime at thericksmithshow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
It's coming like the tide of flood beneath the sway. Imperial.